Hey, we got numbers going. It's Cleveland Moto Podcast number 461. Light them up, boys.
Ding, 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 ding. Oh, dang, that got some distance.
Was that John?
Yes.
Man, that thing nearly hit me.
You can put somebody's eye out.
It came out fast. Smallish crew today. Not small like last week, but small-ish. To my immediate left, not behind the bar tonight.
Tom Bennington.
Yes. And to his immediate left.
Cider. Steve Sleepy.
And to his immediate left.
Johnny Mackey Fresh.
Johnny Mackey Fresh. And to his left.
Pete Hemfling.
All right. Just wanted to say, this week, we were really hoping that we'd be into spring. We're not. We're into fourth winter.
Yeah.
No shit. It fucking snowed on the way to work this morning.
Oh, man. It's just brutal. It's tough. And we've got all these bikes in the service department that all came in when the weather was nice. But now they're done, and yeah. Nobody wants to come and pick them up. So I'm like,
do you offer rental skis?
Right. No, but I do offer delivery. And yep. So we've been capitalizing on some of the deliveries lately, too. One of the things that we wanted to talk about, which is part, I was going to bring a bike here tonight so that everybody could try it out. And the bike that I didn't bring out was going to be Brother Tim's bike. So Pete's brother, Tim, tell us how, because we did have Tim on the podcast right after he got the bike. So we were doing an outside crackle cast one night, and that bike, that Zongshen, the RX3, I believe it came out one night that we got to look at it at least. I don't know if anybody rode it.
And in fucks Brother Tim.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Fucks right into the scene. But anyway, the reason I wanted to bring it out was Tim has decided that he's had his fun with it. Now, how long has he had that? Because I think the bike's a 2015.
Well, he bought it new, so yeah.
Oh, he did?
Yeah,
okay,
yeah, yeah.
All right.
Eight years?
Brand spanking new machine. And he asked me to help him liquidate it, right? Make it go away. And I don't think, and I asked him, I said, well, Tim, you've had this bike, you've done things to this bike. Give me a price. Give me an idea for a price that I'm going to sell this bike for.
Because I mean, it's not a high dollar bike to begin with. Right?
Well, this is going to weigh into the situation. Right. And that's why we're talking about it.
Right.
Because when I asked Tim, give me a price, Tim didn't give me a price. Tim said, well, see what you can get for it. You know, kind of that deal. And then see what you can get for it, and then we'll work it out from there.
Tim, here's your $20.
Yeah. Right. Well, and I mean, so it is impossible. Now, I got the image pulled up for our listeners out in the field so that they can see it. And the bike is made by Zongshen. And Zongshen, Chinese company that's been building motorcycles for a long time.
Zongshen!
Zongshen! But Zongshen has built a lot of things. And for people who are not used to translating Chinese manufacturing into bikes we recognize, it would help you to know that many, many, many of the Piaggio products over the years have been made by Zongshen, right? A lot of the stuff. So, yeah, that's not going to be. John's a sleepy boy. We're going to have.
Yeah, we're not going to keep him long.
A whole lot of John today.
Well, that's when the Fly 150, when it lost the immobilizer, that was the first Zongshen that Piaggio got.
Yeah, there was all kinds of stuff, right? Yeah, lots. There have been various different permutations of that stuff, and the reason I want to bring that up because I picked the bike up with 11,000 miles on it. It started perfectly. Like, we took it out of Tim's garage and hit the button for one half of 1 second, and it just duk, 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 just happy as fuck. It's a fuel-injected bike. And I was like, okay, great. So I got on the bike and gave it a little loop around, the driveway there, put my ramp down and just fucking rode it right up the ramp into the back of the truck and didn't seem to have any problems whatsoever. And he gave me a box of takeoff stuff that, you know, he'd acquired and changed things, windshields and stuff like that, over his ownership. Now, Tim, tell us a little bit about the 11,000 miles that, or Pete, tell me about the 11,000 miles that this bike traversed.
That's the bike he took to Baja, which was 2019. Actually, it was March of 2019, which we talked about on the podcast back then. So on that trip, we shipped the bikes to Vegas. We flew into Vegas, and then we rode down to San Diego, crossed into Baja, rode the length of Baja, and back up. And then when we got back into San Diego, we rode all the way back home to Cleveland from there. That was the biggest trip that bike did.
Yep.
That bike did.
That's a big trip. I mean, any way you slice it, you rode the Baja Mexico.
Yeah.
And you added Across America to that.
Right.
Right. Okay.
And that's a 250cc bike.
It is.
Yeah. So, especially.
So that bike paid for itself right there.
I think it did.
Yeah. Yeah,
oh,
right.
Absolutely.
Oh, God. If you'd have been renting that bike, you'd have been in trouble.
And we've been on a number of smaller, like, adventures, you know, and day rides, whatever, a couple hundred mile day rides here and there and whatever. But somehow it added up to 11,000. But I think the Baja trip was the jewel in its crown.
Yeah. And it did fine on that trip?
Yeah, absolutely. Tim didn't do fine, but the bike did fine.
What happened to Tim?
Well, okay, I tell the same story to everyone. Like, we were riding with a group from California, and they said, oh, some of this gets, there's a little bit of sand up here. Well, a little bit of sand to California guy is different from a little bit of sand to an Ohio guy.
Yeah.
And so Tim had a pretty steep learning curve there, getting through the sand. I think he crashed like maybe three times that first day, just fall over in the sand, you know. And then by the end of the week, though, I couldn't keep up with him. So he figured it out.
Oh, he did?
Figured out the sand and stuff. But
so what's the move? Because I've been in sand, but I don't know about being in that kind of sand. So what was the move?
Just keep your weight back. Keep the front end light. Don't fight it. You know, you don't want to wash out the front wheel or make it plow or anything. And your throttle's your friend. And stay light on the peg, or stay light on the bars, and just keep your weight on the peg and shift your weight around as
so
to
sort
steer
of
the bike.
Like deeper gravel, then some kind of
yeah, exactly, yeah. Or it's like water skiing or like skiing in powder or anything else. You know,
okay.
Keep your tips up, kind of thing.
Yeah, I mean, and it is, too. There's all kinds of different sand out there.
Yeah.
And so you kind of feel it out, and you'll figure out, like, okay, this sand.
Yeah.
Or what's under the sand.
Well, that's
makes
what,
a big difference.
Well, we don't, like, if you come from the East Coast and you're not used to any sand,
mm-hmm.
even when you first start getting into it, when you just get pockets of sand, that's where it's actually scarier. Like, I had the one time when I was getting out west, and there was, like, in between the rock ravines, there might be a foot or two of sand trapped
yeah.
in them.
Yeah.
And that's, like, an instant speed decreaser.
Yeah.
Like, really fast.
Brake check.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, when he bought this bike, I think they were selling them for $3,000, $29.99.
Yeah, thereabouts, right?
Yep. And so, this was a liquid-cooled six-speed transmission motorcycle for $29.99. Delivered to your door for, I think, $32.99. And it just was one of those, when they first came out, we said in our podcast, we're like, well, we're all going to take one of those cautious optimisms. Well, let's let Tim find out how it's going to be. Because none of us were plunking down our 3200 large.
And also, yeah. you could spend 7 or 8 hours at night reading the forums
yes.
of people that had these and guys that didn't have them and had their opinions. And oh my God, it was insane.
Yeah. And that is the nicest possible way
to put it.
This
becomes a long-term test.
Well, this is a real long-term
test. This is a real long-term test.
I was going to bring it by tonight so you guys could ride it, but... I'm not at all joking when I tell you, I took it home. So I decided that if it was good enough for Tim, that it was good enough for me, and I was going to ride it home. And it turns out, pretty fucking cool. And the way that I like to do on some of these bikes is I'll ride home to a certain point on my way home, and I know if I get off the highway, there's a railroad track there, and adjacent to the Norfolk Southern Railroad track, there is what? There is a service road, right?
Allegedly.
And there is not one sign, by the way, that tells you you're not allowed to be there. I've taken all of them down.
I mean, if you were to be there.
I've made sure that there is nobody can ever tell me, you're not supposed to be here. And I've like, my concept is, well, it's, you know, this is public. This is the right-of-way or the siding for the railroad. So... that should be Bureau of Land Management's responsibility, as far as I'm concerned. So,
or you just play stupid.
That's generally what my general operating procedure is, to play stupid.
Yeah.
I wrote it. I was like, yeah, it's pretty good. It's doing good. What I can tell you is it did not like the short amount of freeway that I did between McKinley and the first exit. I got through all six gears before I was going 45 miles an hour. I was well into top gear at 45. I got it up to about 60. And I had to look down at the tack because I was like, that's 10,000 RPM. It feels like 10,000 RPM. And I looked down at the tack, and it was a lot of RPMs. And I got it up to about 70. And at 70, I was like, whoa, I am really, it is me versus the wind right now.
Yeah.
And the wind was winning. And we had a wind coming out of the west, and I was going into it. Now, how fast have you seen this motorcycle go?
Well,
because I've
seen it go 80, but that was that was in my rearview mirror, and okay. He was like drafting me when I was on the BMW, and then I would draft him and then slingshot him up behind a truck on the interstate. And he could hold the 80 behind a truck all day long.
And he's not a big guy. I mean, he's not a big guy. He's real lean. Yeah, he's a real lean guy. And once I got off the freeway, I was like, wow, okay, that was intense. And then you do just remember, you're on a 250, right?
What's the best thing about sex when you're camping? It's intense.
Yes, it is intense.
So anybody above the $10 level got that joke.
Yeah, that was a $5 punchline.
Hey, Phil, it's a picture of you.
Well, I wanted to bring up because I decided that, you know, they have these piles. They have these piles of tailings.
Yeah.
So every so often, there's a pile of tailings that they use to bolster the railway bed, right? And they just lay them out there. Just have them sitting out there. If anybody needs any asphalt tailings, I know where to get them for free. I don't think Norfolk Southern or mine, but anyhow. So I just was hitting the edges of those tailings to make little nice little jumps out of them. Just make a little jump, and then go a little deeper.
So son comes home and says, "Hey, Dad, I just lost my virginity." And the father says, "Oh, that's great. Here, sit down. Let's have a drink." He says, "No, I can't. It still hurts."
Was he coming back from church?
No.
Yowza. So I did increasingly larger little bumps, like little, not really calling them jumps, right? But bumps, right? And I got to my third and most confident of them, and I went up in the air, and I was like, yeah, okay, now I'm actually in the air. And when I landed, the right rear saddlebox just jumped off the motorcycle.
Your pannier?
My pannier became Pannier Airlines. It was just, and the bike, I don't think I actually bottomed the suspension all the way out, but it was enough that on the rebound, the box just went, fuck off. And I had to stop and go back and get it. And then I realized the bracketry system on those ain't exactly, you know, SW Motec.
No.
Yeah.
But I was thinking, though, with his brother and the way it was set up,
mm-hmm.
I mean, like, I'm sure that suspension was fairly stiff for him.
Yeah, it was.
You have to have a stone on him.
It wasn't real stiff for me. It was pretty soft.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
It was pretty soft suspension for me. And so that was fun. I got to do a little jump on it, kind of skidded around a little bit, did some slides, threw some gravel around, threw some dirt around.
Because if you look at the kid in the picture that you have posted,
yeah,
he's 8.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Like, look in the helmet.
The person in this, the person in the shot is the lightest, smallest American they could put on this bike for that photo shoot.
So you say you were riding it like you were selling it for somebody else.
Yes, exactly. Yep, that's exactly right. And, you know, he's done some stuff to it. He put heated grips on it, which is actually pretty handy on the day that I had it because it was fucking cold. And I did ride it the rest of the way home, and it did great, and it was fine. And so, you know, getting it home, and then I rode it to work the next day, and riding it to work the next day, sometimes in my route, it's 18 miles of freeway. And this day, it was 3 miles of freeway because I was not going to do that again. I was like, okay, I'm going to ride Lake Road, take the scenic way most of the way in. But I wanted to say that after 11,000 miles, this is a solid bike.
And it's on the same motor it started with?
Yeah.
Yep.
Wow.
Yeah, I don't see any reason not to.
I know the only thing it's done to it is like valve adjustments. Yeah. And I don't think I've replaced wheel bearings or anything else. Just, yeah, it was it.
Kind of surprising. I mean, if anybody would have said, this is a $6,000 motorcycle, I would have said, yeah, right? Mm-hmm. It feels like a bike with 10,000 miles on it. Sure, it feels like a bike. You also would have told me it had 2,000 miles on it. I would have believed that too. It wasn't sketchy. It wasn't shimmy. It didn't feel like garbage. It felt actually okay. It felt fine. It didn't feel like the Steve McQueen edition, but it felt like a motorcycle if somebody would said, this is what we're going to be riding.
Somewhere between refined and primitive.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so that was a very interesting experience for me. Why did we bring that up? Well, we bring it up because they announced today that the folks over at Lon Sin, or wherever you're from, that their long-going partnership with BMW that goes back now many, many years in various different ways, that Lon Chin is going deeper into that, and they are going to offer a Lon Chin under the name Vogue, V-O-G-E. Now, you guys may or may not have ever heard of Vogue motorcycles.
Really?
But yes, so Vogue motorcycles. Dun,
dun. Well, because one of the, I'm not going to lie, one of the first Chinese bikes I ever worked on was a Vogue 260.
Correct.
And it was the worst piece of junk so, I ever.
Well, because it was Lon Chin under yep. a different name.
Yep.
And that's where.
Rakita.
Well, and, okay, but.
That's going back.
I promise you guys, when we were joking about like CF Moto, and Tom goes,
oh, yeah.
Right? Right?
Oh, yeah. I still have nightmares about the E-Charm.
Exactly. So when we start thinking about stuff like that, well, Lon Chin, Vogue, and BMW, it's going to be very hard to differentiate yep. where one bike's DNA stops and the next one starts when they're selling a 1,000cc BMW SR plant-powered bike, right?
Because they started with the G, what is it, the G450, but mm-hmm. not the X, the other two.
The Country.
Yep.
Yeah. And so this, so because this is what this is, I want to say we're going to go, we're going deeper down the fucking well of,
yep.
I don't want a Chinese bike. Well, good luck.
Yeah, at this point.
Because if you've got a parallel twin BMW, you've been riding a Lon Chin. Well, and you've been riding a Lon Chin since it no longer said made in Austria on the side. Because that Rotex Inspired, that was a partnership.
Yep.
And the partnership has gotten deeper, well, deeper.
Ever since the F800 came out, forget it.
So this is the thing that we want to make sure that people kind of have an understanding about. Yep. Because that to me is something that people should be aware of as we're going into these new markets, because this is a thing. And the idea of a Chinese BMW S1000RR is something that people might think about, right? Because there is the SR, so the SR350 adventure scooter, which is part on the DNA of the BMW C400X, right? And they're looking at a 1600 GT, which is BMW's flagship touring yep. bike, right? And Vogue already has the DSR 900X. So the DSR 900X is a BMW engine. That's the 900, the BMW 900 motor. So by brand engineering, you can have BMW over here, you can have Vogue here in the middle, and you can have Lon Chin over here. Because a lot of people use Lon Chin. Lon Chin's name yeah. appears on a hell well, of a lot think of stuff.
If you back engineer that deal,
mm-hmm.
so BMW must be getting motors for just insane prices or something to give away that much of their brand. Because, like, you know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. that's going to, people are going to, like, some of the purists are going to take that in a very hard way as this develops, well, I think.
BMW doesn't have purists. BMW has people that buy a lot of very expensive gear and want to hang out in front of a Starbucks.
Except for the guy who's sitting at the end of the table over yeah. here, who's actually now, been to all the BMW training schools and has several BMWs. And,
yeah, right. Come on, I have an 1150 rotting in the garage.
And walks
yeah, but
the
his
walk.
Does like what they're
know,
made to do.
I know.
Right.
God, I never want to see that bike again. I actually never have a customer supply a motor because that thing was crap.
I'm just trying to figure out like what the benefit would be, like, unless it is just monetary.
Oh, it's money.
I mean, that's yeah,
it's all money.
Maybe it's knowing your audience, man. Yeah. Maybe it's knowing your audience.
BMW's been building garbage cars for 30 years. I don't know why they wouldn't move it to motorcycles.
Because they're known for, I mean, like, you know, like they're the pinnacle of bikes. Basically.
But maybe that's why you don't do it under BMW's name.
Yeah.
Maybe that's why you use Vogue.
Yeah.
A company that's sacrificial, but in other countries where somebody cannot throw $32,000
yeah.
at a 1600 GT, well, maybe they can throw $18,000 at a Vogue 1600 GT.
Yeah.
Right? And it doesn't have everything that the BMW has, but if you take it apart, then we're going to discover, remember, KTM's pretty fucking rad. Well, we're already at the point now where it's going to take looking at the numbers on the side of the case, the laser engraved numbers on the side of the case, to know whether your KTM has a Chinese made motor
right.
with a made in Austria on the neck of the bike, or whether it has an Austrian made motor.
I guess the real question is, at what point do you start saying, "Ooh, I want the Chinese motor because it's better than the Astra?"
Well,
I mean, I would never.
That's the real question.
I would never, but at some point, I mean,
Now, to kind of bring this back around, we were talking about cars earlier with another friend of mine, and we were talking about which Lexus is built in Japan versus the Lexus that's built here in Tennessee or wherever. And this is sort of that same idea of, at what price point are you buying a Chinese BMW, which is the F800?
Well, I just bought my car. It says it's a Kia. It says
It's made in Alabama.
No, it says made in Korea.
Ah.
But I think that's because it was the hybrid. It may have been made in Korea.
Yeah.
But which do you want more? The one that was made in America or made in Korea?
That's the problem is because when you're buying an American car, you're still buying an accumulation of parts that have been built in 2,700 different countries, and the origination is either in Alabama or Korea. So that's what it comes down to. When you're talking about a KTM, you know, what do they assemble it in Austria still with Chinese parts?
So I'm going to throw a picture up, and then we're going to ask people who know things about motorcycles. Mm. We're going to say where. And what is this motorcycle?
It's like, do you want an American car or a Japanese car?
Right.
Well, if you get a Camry, it was a Japanese car made in America.
My Honda Element was built right down the road.
Correct. So, interesting.
So, I just pulled a picture up of you know, a motorcycle that's pretty easy to acknowledge, or pretty easy to recognize.
I love Japanese, you know, made motorcycles like KZ900s and Goldwings that are made in Japan.
No, the Goldwing, yeah.
Nebraska.
So the Goldwing was right down here, yeah.
Right, Nebraska,
well,
cause Ohio.
Well, because we had this conversation earlier about the Zongshen. It has a very much V-Strom XT look to it, but everybody has adopted the beak and the funny eyebrows.
Schnauzel. So what's this motorcycle that we're looking at?
Well, it's a Yamasaki.
It's a parallel twin 900.
Yep.
First things first. I see a lot of BMW DNA. How do you feel about that, Pete?
At first glance, I thought it was a BMW.
Me too.
Yeah.
Nope. The very first thing when I saw that motorcycle, I swear to God, I was like, it's a 2022 BMW 900.
You know how I can tell it's not?
Go ahead.
Those tires have tubes in them. Those are not the tubeless. No,
they're not. Those are tubeless.
Do they have
the spokey
dogs? They have external spokes.
They have external spokes.
Okay, those are the BMW spokes.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying is like. Yeah. It wouldn't shock me if somebody says, okay, if it says BMW on the side, it gets tubes. It gets cheap tires. It gets cheap wheels. It gets cheap tubes. But when I look at this motorcycle, I see a hell of a lot of the same stuff.
But it's so weird, though, because, like, if you look, it has, like, part of a Yamaha where the rondel is, looks Yamaha. The headlight looks Yamaha.
Mm-hmm.
The cases and the wheels look BMW. The schnozzle looks kind of like Honda, actually, like one of the NC versions.
Have you seen the V-Strom XT?
That too.
Everybody else is kind of going after that XT look. It's hysterical to say that because the XT is not a very popular model.
Isn't China
going to fuck? Everything's kind of going after that.
Going to fuck themselves eventually if you're like KTM and you have China build KTMs and you design them and you give them everything and then like in 2 years they start coming out with your same bike. Pirated.
We know people that's happened to.
And then that starts happening to BMW, right. And then it's like, well, wait a second. We can't have them build our bikes anymore because if we give them the bikes to build, they're just going to build them for a couple years and then
you're of an age.
Pirate them.
Do you remember the Dodge Colt? The first Dodge Colt.
Yes, I do.
Do you remember who built that?
No.
Mitsubishi.
Yeah.
And now now Mitsubishi's made a horrible name for themselves, but before everybody was all in on Mitsubishi. So you had the Colt and the Sapporo.
I don't have problems with that.
But this is what you're talking about
The problem I have with China is that they're a military near peer, and you know what I mean? Exactly. Like, we're funding.
Well, not really, but.
Yes, they are. Absolutely. I guarantee it. I 100%. You know what, Tom? I'll let you slide on a lot of shit, but when it comes down to if I get activated, which ain't going to fucking happen, but if I had to go out there and face an enemy.
Oh, yeah.
No, it's not sheer numbers. It is technological. Bad news bears, guys. All the drones that are taking out the entire Russian fucking armored forces, are made in China.
That's true.
Okay? That's where battles are going to be won in the future.
True.
And if you don't think that China already has swarm drone technology, and if you don't think that China already has the ability to throw lots of moderate high-tech aircraft at the problem, yeah, I think near peer is the best possible word for it.
If China goes to a war economy,
right.
And stops making silly motorcycles and cars and building military.
There were we were in 38. So yeah, no,
I wonder ramping if up. There's a way that I wonder if there's a way that a country could monetize and build an amazing high tech manufacturing base beyond their normal station, not just building bicycle frames anymore with motors on them. Wonder if there's a way that somebody could get to elevate their manufacturing to cutting-edge Western-level technology or German-level technology or Japanese-level technology and could make their factories that fucking good, but on somebody else's dime. Mm-hmm. Interesting. That would be China. Yeah. Because when BMW is drawing the plans and BMW is paying the bills, and BMW is designing the equipment, the tooling, the machinery, and has the engineers there. And when John says, oh, well, somebody got pissed off and the switch got flipped, now that factory that BMW paid for is churning out the highest possible tech near-peer adversarial weapon systems.
In staggering numbers.
Because labor's never been a problem for them.
Sure.
And we live in a country where getting labor has become very fucking difficult.
Yeah, but I heard in 10 years that's going to flip for China because they're an inverted society.
They are an inverted society, but right now they can currently produce 1,000 times the 150 millimeter shells than we can on our best day.
Yeah.
Right, but I'm saying, okay, take the war out of it. I'm saying, involved with, making things.
Yeah.
Like, in the next 10 years, they're not going to be able to supply the factories with workers.
Basically. I think they will.
You think?
Yeah, they're not.
They'll go through the same revolution. I mean, it's just, they're talking about a 32-hour work week
right,
here.
Right.
Well, they'll just go through automation and AI and all this stuff to where the average they may have less workers, but those workers will be like American workers who are 400% more productive and still getting paid the same.
Right. And that's one of the things that's always concerned me because I've seen this amazing shift. In a very short period of time, CFMOTO went from being we didn't want to work on to having KTM knock on their door. Hey, we'll give you all the engineers. We'll give you all the tooling. We'll give you all the technology. Can you make those motors for us? Because we heard you can make them just as good for one quarter as much money. Mm-hmm. And I like profit. And we like selling more bikes. So if we could have more bikes that are more affordable to more people. If anybody's looked at KTM numbers recently, KTM used to be like, oh, yeah, and at the end there, over there, we got KTM.
Yeah.
And KTM has moved up to the point where KTM is giving Yamaha concerns as far as volumes of units sold, right?
And, I'm the CEO. I really enjoy getting $10 million a year, but if I could get $250 million a year by moving everything to China, that'd be really
cool. Oh, yeah. So when we see QJ doing, MV Agusta things, right? You don't do MV Agusta things with the factory that built Rokettas.
Yeah.
You don't. You cannot afford to do MV Agusta things with the factory that built fucking Rokettas or Hawk 200s or whatever. You need to modernize. You need to increase the capabilities of that factory. Now, wouldn't it be great if you could do that using somebody else's money? Because when Lan Xin shakes hands with BMW, Lan Xin's not paying the tab.
Yeah.
BMW's paying the tab. That's money from Germany coming into China and technology from Germany going into China. So that's where I'm a teeny weensy bit concerned about how could China blow right the fuck past us, mixing super high-tech capabilities that other countries pay for and a workforce that will not fight for $7.50 an hour, right? That's scary. It should be scary. You know, it's one of those things. And also, we are lucky enough in this particular country that we haven't had to stare down the barrel of the local car dealership down there. Marky Mark Wahlberg has not yet started selling Geelys or BYDs.
Well, no, but Buick's been selling Chinese vehicles and, here since 1997.
You know,
1997.
And Volvo's part and parcel owned by, what, Kiway?
Kiway. Yeah.
But you know what? I'm starting to see, yep. What are those Jeeps that they can't get street legal?
Oh, Mahindra.
But they're yeah, because they're at all the big all the big implement shops out by my house.
Do you look
at
all the Buick Encores and those little compact SUVs made in China?
Yeah. Yep.
Right.
That's the thing is we might be in that case, well, we might be a couple of years away from having, because Daihatsu made a go of it and then didn't.
Daihatsu can make a go of it because at the time our trading status with them.
It's silly that we still buy so much stuff from. There's a billion other places. We could buy stuff from anybody else that's not a military near peer.
Yep.
Invest in India. Invest in Taiwan. Indonesia. Anything. Yeah. I don't care about the money. Like, just stop giving it to China.
That's
nobody's got the price point.
Yeah. Come on.
Turns out all the people in charge of those companies you talked about earlier, they like profit.
Yeah. I mean... You know, we're talking about one of the two presidential candidates coming up talks shit about China but gets all of his shit made in China at the same fucking time. Right. So
yeah, it's something that we should be aware of. When I was calling the internet this week for motorcycle news stories, the vast majority of motorcycle news stories that I found were announcing and extolling the virtues of Chinese manufactured goods. Chinese manufactured motorcycles. In fact, Cycle World Magazine, I was going to do a burn today on here's Cycle World's magazine's 12 stories that they launched this week. 10 of them were about Chinese made motorcycles, and they were like, the sun shines out of this bike's ass. This is the greatest motorcycle we've ever ridden, and you should go out and buy one right now, even though there aren't any dealers that sell them.
Transistorized radios are the future.
Well, how fucking scared should you be when a national publication starts telling you that this is the greatest bike in the world, you should go buy one right now, yet there aren't any in dealers anywhere.
Yep.
So they're using their marketing power, they're using their money to promote a product that isn't in a dealership that you can go buy yet. I wonder what's coming next.
I just read an article about China. It was like it's basically the drop number two that China's pulling right now is they're flooding the market with solar panels, electric vehicles. Yep. They started and they're just now it's like if you look, solar panels are going to come way down, and it's going to gut everybody else's industry. And it's like steel dumping. You know, when they started dumping steel and dumping all that,
so it's almost like we needed
it's the second shoe falling.
It's almost like we needed this partnership with Asian countries as far as manufacturing goes that. Controlled and regulated back and forth and made sure that China couldn't dump on the United States all of this stuff. But somehow that didn't happen.
No, again, watch that. You know, just be aware of that, because I think that to a lot of us, I don't think we'd be a whole lot happier.
The only thing that would make me happy and the hope is, though, is that they're going to come out, they're going to invest all this money, and they're going to dump all these electric vehicles and everything.
Yeah.
And then the industry is going to be like, that doesn't really make sense. We're going to do hydrogen fuel cell, or that it's going to move past. Them.
If they dump it here, it'll be cheap. If they dump it here cheap, it's going to win.
Right. Another problem is that China has been dumping electric powered cars into their own situation. If you do want to do a YouTube search, look for unsold Chinese EVs.
Yeah.
And if you look at that, you'll see factories that have 12,000 unsold Chinese vans in the factory and dust, dirt, an inch and a half high on it, and then at multiple different yards and multiple different fields, thousands and thousands more of them. And each one of those counts as a unit sold by BYD or Geely or whoever, so they can say we're the number one producing we're the number one producing electric vehicle manufacturer. Fuck you, Tesla. Look at how many we sold. But the point is, they didn't sell them. They produced them. And they're not being driven around.
This was that mentality when they started building really cities with nothing in them, and then the buildings started falling down. Because
Tofu Dreg.
Yeah.
Tofu Dreg gets you.
Yep.
All right, so back on to something else we can't have.
Oh.
I'm very happy to see people having fun with the monkeys.
Right.
Right? Because there's a product we all absolutely love and love dearly, and it's super fun and cool. And there's this group, and you should be watching or following Cub House Honda. Cub House Honda has a sense of goddamn humor about itself. And they are making buku limited editions. Buku limited editions. And they are doing, one of them is the Star Wars Monkey, where you get to choose the light side or the dark side. If you get the dark side, you get an LED lightsaber with a red lightsaber blade to come as your, you know, your keychain or what have you, to go with your fun monkey bike. And if you choose light side, you get a very R2-D2 looking motorcycle that comes with a lightsaber with a blue blade on it. Fucking fun, hilarious, super cool. You want to get kids into riding motorcycles?
Yep.
That's right there. That's pretty fucking cool. Absolutely love light side, dark side monkeys.
Kids are like 50-year-old dudes.
Yeah, well, because we've been getting Star Wars marketed to us since 1977,
yeah.
And all we're saying is more, please. No, absolutely no doubt about it. Just please give me more of that shit. When Honda doesn't build the special edition that you want, it turns out you can.
You know what? You know what's going to be kind of sucky for kids? Like, so for us, when Star Wars came out,
right?
Like, there was nothing before. Like, that was like, holy shit, like there was lasers and there's spaceships flying through the air. Like, you know what I mean? Like, we'd never seen that. Yeah. So what kind of a movie could come out now where kids would be amazed by it? Like, it would have to be, because they've seen everything through CGI.
Do you remember a few years ago the thing around the Avengers when they finally build up to the final crescendo and now everything has kind of been kind of, that is kind of their Star Wars moment. Is what I mentioned.
All right, I'll give
and then
that.
You've also got the younger kids that are into girls, but Frozen was a huge cultural moment. Exactly. You have a daughter, so you know that there are cultural pieces.
But I don't think. But it wasn't something that they hadn't seen before. It was just a big. It was a big. There was lots of big movies, but I mean, like Star Wars was a new thing.
It created its own niche, but that's the question is, and I get it. What haven't they seen? And that might be fall down to there's nothing new under the sun until you introduce lasers.
You could kind of say like those Avatar movies, those were kind of
great. Because that was CGI.
Disney is supposed to be building a whole new Avatar world, like this whole immersive experience.
Gone big.
Let's go into yet another thing we're not allowed to have. Since we're doing things we're not allowed to have, Meckle Fresh has been trying to have this thing for fucking ever.
My cheeks are so pudgy, I can't even make the jerk.
The Dax is back, but we just need to get it over here, man.
It took them a while to get the monkey. This is on the way.
We just got
to
get.
They just got to figure out how to get it here.
Can somebody make the jerk off sound for me?
Which is so weird because you'd think that they're just taking all the same mechanics and throwing them on a fucking different pressed metal frame.
Oh yeah.
Like what's the holdup?
And that gives me faith. That gives me faith because the line from Grom, to Super Cub, was like. Two years.
Yeah.
And then the line from Super Cub to Monkey or Hunter Cub was like 7 months.
Yeah.
Year and a half.
Yeah. That's what I'm saying.
So I feel pretty good. I feel pretty good about, the good news is, by the way, all we're talking about is the United States. Because the rest of the planet's got this.
Yeah.
So
bullshit.
Honda USA.
But the rest of the planet didn't get the Hunter Cub.
That's right.
I mean, it was selective where they got it.
It was selective. That's exactly right. That is exactly right. And I do think that, I think the Dax is an excellent thing for the American market because if you didn't notice, Americans tend to run a little thicker. Mm-hmm. We tend to run just a wee bit thicker.
It's the only one that's two up capable.
It is.
And it's the biggest one, I think, for the States.
Yeah.
If you were like of the age of 10 or so in the late 70s,
mm-hmm.
The Trail 70 was the bike you saw first.
No, my
more than a Cub, more than anything. Like
that's one of the first bikes I rode. My cousin had a garbage brown one.
Yeah. It is undoubtedly the one that
Yeah.
Definitely. It was like, yeah. And I don't know whether it's there's that angle of like, well, we're not allowed to have it, so I want it more.
Yeah,
I don't know.
I think it was just ubiquitous with like
as soon as
motorcycles.
I mean, yeah. I've had like a Red Cat version, and what is it? Ice Bear has their version, right. And all that stuff. Mm-hmm. You know, and they're all right. They're cool. It's beats buying a 30-year-old one that you got to restore to ride.
Right.
But yeah. Being able to walk into a Honda dealer and buy this stuff.
Right.
You yeah, know, it's especially when it looks like a 76 AMF Sportster.
You know what's crazy though? Like so, like yeah. I've had like one of the shitty, you know, like the ones you were talking
yeah.
about.
Yeah,
and it worked and it did what it was supposed to do. But I'll tell you what, John's like beat up ass whatever 1980 whatever. You hit the gas and that thing pulls like a fucking like 10 horses are strapped to a fucking.
Oh yeah,
like there's something very different about the Honda compared to the other ones.
It shocks me how many like 1992 red ones there are that pop up still. Like with no miles on them.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mine's actually an 82.
82.
Well, there's, it. No, yeah. yeah. But like, there's like, they didn't even know they released them, but there's like right. a bunch of 1992 red.
Yeah. That's where I've had customers that had them.
Yeah.
And I promise you, I've taken them apart. They're not made in Japan. So
they're
Honda, they have Honda badging on them all over but them. They were sold at Honda dealers.
It's like black handlebars and stuff. Yeah.
Taken them. I've had them through the shop many times. They are not made in Japan. I promise you that is another one of those CF Moto deals.
There you go.
Where you're like, look, it's really a Honda Helix. And you're like, that is not a Honda Helix.
Do you think
they're
Kymco?
That is.
Is that would have been the Kymco era?
No, it wasn't. It was CF Moto era.
Ah, okay.
That was CF Moto era.
So another news item. This is. We need a drum roll for this.
Uh-oh.
This is Mid-Ohio news.
Uh-oh. Well, my God, my friend. Tell me more.
Not only is Mid-Ohio going to be the usual awesome, great time that Mid-Ohio is usually, and not only is there going to be the normal racing that we're so used to seeing, all the great stuff that we're used to seeing, they have brought the bagger racing to Mid-Ohio. They're bringing Motos America's bagger racing exhibition.
Bagger hair scrambles.
But I'm excited, man. If you guys have not watched it, it is fucking really entertaining.
Yeah, it's pretty rad. It's definitely a different mindset of road racing.
It's the way it used to be. It reminds me of the old AMA Superbike days when like the guys were really going balls at each other, mm-hmm. like scraping paint, getting it done. Like it's
it also to me it reminds me a lot of the Battle of the Twin Series bots, mm-hmm. like the old Battle of the Twin Series. Where you're like, okay, well we've created a class for Ducati,
mm-hmm.
and we invite all the rest of you to participate too. With whatever you've got. Mm-hmm. Honda's like, we can build a Super Hawk really quick. Honda's like, we can build a VT1000, I promise you. Suzuki did a TL1000, mm-hmm. you know. Companies were like, we'll play.
Yeah.
We'll play. And this silly bagger thing, they kicked the door open for Harley, because Harley needed something that they could be competitive in other than Flat Tracker.
Right.
And with bikes that you couldn't buy.
Right.
Because nobody's watching Flat Track going, I'm going to buy one of those next week.
Right.
Because it's been pretty much factory specials for a really, really long time.
Yeah.
And I was very, very much impressed the first time I saw the bagger class, the bagger racing. I was like, oh, okay, I get this. And it took Indian exactly 1 year.
Oh, yeah.
To go, oh, yeah, we can do that.
Mm-hmm.
And it turned into the whole Battle of the Twin Series thing again, mm-hmm. where it was just like, okay, oh, if anybody would like to come in, this is existing technology. You do not need to hire a space shuttle team to build
a bagger. Well, and that's what's interesting. So why isn't Yamaha and some of these other guys jumping in? They have the Star Series, right, and all the other stuff.
There's going to be a Goldwing.
It's going to get a pass. It's going to be an F6B. And it's going to get an allowance on the whole, like, you know, displacement rules or something, just based, because you're right. You're right. There's no reason not to.
It's not my bag, man.
What are the rules?
If it's a bagger class and you have to let all the baggers
in. You know,
right.
I'm waiting for the Honda Shadow.
Okay.
There's going to be a Honda Shadow.
We got to look up the
rules. Which there
rule.
Should be. A VTX, should be. Why the fuck not?
Yeah.
Why the fuck not?
Ooh, a VTX 1800 probably rocked that.
Okay, so
or what's the Yamaha, the big racy, the MT-109? Isn't that kind
of
a...
Oh, that's a Suzuki.
That's a Suzuki.
Yeah, Suzuki MT-109.
But okay.
M-109, yeah. Sorry, M-109.
But okay.
But fuck yeah, bring it on. They all have big V-twins.
Yeah.
Yeah.
None of these companies don't have big V-twins.
Triumph's going to bring the Rocket 3.
Triumph could bring the Rocket 3. 2.5 liters of power. Hey, again, makes it more interesting.
It does. Yeah. Right? Like you want a lot of people
makes
involved
it
in
more
this.
More interesting. Okay. Mid-Ohio's 2.4-mile road course with its legendary keyhole and carousel sections has a fresh coat of asphalt and is ready to welcome a full slate of vintage road racing during VMD. Classes will include hand-shifted pre-war racers, non-current superbikes, modern machines, and everything in between, even sidecar rigs.
Honda Monkeys?
During the parade lap of history.
Yep.
Yes. The parade race of history. But I love that where he goes, for this year, the program will shake the ground in a new way with the addition of big V-twin engines and the visual spectacle of full-fared bagger motorcycles at speed. Now, there is a lot of chicanery, right? You know, what sort of fuckery is this? Because you look at the baggers and you go, okay, I see that. I see the frame. I recognize that particular frame. I recognize that particular motor. That swing arm doesn't belong on that motorcycle. Mm-mm. Those forks don't belong on that motorcycle. I'm pretty sure the bags are made of stiffened Saran wrap.
Yeah, they're carbon fiber shapes. That took them 1 year. The first year, it was all real motorcycles.
Right. Yeah.
By the second year, it was all this.
It was all this. Yeah. It was all just like, okay.
Like the bags were falling off. They were like,
yeah. Oh, they are.
It's NASCAR now. Yeah. Right. Yeah. You can take a NASCAR apart with your hands.
Well, yeah. And the bags, if you look at them, they're only 5 inches long because they want the clearance.
Yeah.
And they want
still.
Oh, I'm here for it.
I'm here for it.
Yep. Man,
I don't care.
Man, somewhere Eric Buell is just pissed.
Well, yeah, the Creighton,
right. The guy who was building ahead of time, right?
Yeah. I love it because like the aerodynamics are so bad that they get unsettled in the corners and the shit gets wiggly and it's so good. Yeah.
When you look at Yamaha, Aprilia right now, the amount of active aero on an Aprilia is terrifying. Mm-hmm. And this is the opposite of that.
Get out there, Moto Guzzi, California.
Yes,
this is what you're made of.
This is where I was going.
Again.
Get a cylinder down.
Yeah.
Do it.
Yeah, couldn't they just run a caster?
Oh, yeah.
Like a little caster
just
wheel?
Just a wheel. Just a little skateboard wheel out there. Yeah. It's a four-wheeled. It's a three-wheeled vehicle, only in the turns.
Yeah.
Only in the turns.
Get that. What's the big...
We'll get a sidecar classification for the turns.
What's that big one that looks like the fucking Death Star?
That's the one. We're talking about the MG21X.
There you go.
Moto Guzzi MGX21. Yeah.
Just get out there. It's got a freaking cow catcher on the front. It's just running everybody out the road.
All you have to do is take an angle
He stands grinder. It up at the beginning of the straightaway.
Yeah.
Wah, bah,
take an angle grinder and cut everything off at a 45-degree angle. Lay some more carbon fiber in, because the Moto Guzzi MGX21 is all carbon fiber anyway. And you look at this, and it looks so weird with a 17-inch front wheel. It looks so fucking weird. It looks very weird with the 17.
What do you think could that be successful? If you somehow, there's a crashed one, and you bought it up for relatively cheap, and you did some, and you did the work, you think it wouldn't probably cost a whole, $10,000, right? And you could probably be very competitive in that.
Will you take a check?
I really do think that this does actually kind of open the game back up into, hey, so you want to go race motorcycles? I know where I can find a crashed Street Glide, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's worth
nothing. Oh, the front end's fucked up of that. We're tearing that up anyway. That's great.
I got a set of Dixer forks to go right on that.
So when you do explore this particular fucking wackadoodle part of motorsport, right, it's initially, you guys remember, 2 years ago, I was like, this is the dumbest thing that's ever walked on the planet, and I don't think it should be allowed to exist. I think we should kill it now before it mates and reproduces. Nope, too late. You can go to your fucking Indian dealer, and if you have enough money...
92 G's.
If Good you God. Have 92 G's... If you have $92,229, you can click the button that says have a dealer contact me, and they will sell you a racing motorcycle.
I wonder if they vet you. Like, do you have to have your license?
Nope.
It's not a Ferrari, man.
Come on, dude.
You have to have $92,000.
First of all, in the picture I'm looking at, I see DOT tires. Okay? This is my now's your chance to own the two-time championship-winning bike of the Mission Food Kings of the Baggers Race Series, built for the speed and on-track performance of unparalleled power and race customizations designed to put you at the top of the podium. This is a homologation-type project. This is them saying, we don't need to build 20,000 CBR 900RRs, but we need enough to be in the cast. I think Indian might be leaning into something about, like, the King of the Baggers. I think Indian was like, hey, we're so good at this, we can build a homologation special. And Harley's going to have to go, well, we can build one too. Can't we, guys? Can't we? Can we do that? Because they might. They might have to. Why I think this is so fucking amazing, though, is turnkey racers. Like, the idea of just saying, hey, look, I got $100,000. I already own a trailer. I've got some kind of racing license, or I'll go get one. Mm-hmm. And I can be competitive with this machine. They didn't build one of them. They built 29 of them so far. They'll build more, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Right. I'm sure they'll build more.
Well,
right?
There's money involved?
Right.
We'll do
exactly.
That.
Right. Once we find 28
people. We just
talked
about BMW going to China. Right. Victory. Indian is going to get the money, too.
No, not for nothing, but I've thrown a lot of money at going around a racetrack in my life. And when you initially say, like, $92,000, and people go, go to any MotoGP to be at the point where you're on the track out there, you're going to be 60 deep
well,
in
how about
your
this?
Machine pretty quick.
I'm looking at that, and the first thing I see is that those are Olin suspension things sticking out.
Yeah. Yep.
Those forks, and I know because my buddy crashed a bike and had to buy new ones, those forks and the rear shock alone is probably $25,000 at that price.
Mm-hmm.
So these are things, like, they're doing the things that you're going to have to do anyway.
Yeah,
and this isn't a complete factory works-built S&S motor.
Right.
So it's going to be
more than that. No, wait a minute. This is the FTR.
This is not the FTR.
Okay.
This is the King of the Baggers.
I get it.
It is not.
Are they running S&S on this?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, they're running S&S everything because S&S has become their in-house.
What does S&S
performance
stand
team.
For? Do you know?
I do not know. I can tell you. I get it. That's a blind spot with me.
Yeah.
Right.
That's Slippy and Sally. Or
I mean, I've worked on them. I couldn't tell you what it is.
Right. So anyway,
Stinky and Slapmore.
This is an Indian motor that is completely S&S treatment. This is a factory built racing special. Right. It's pretty fucking cool. I'm okay. I'm okay with it. And as much as I hated the whole King of the Bagger thing, I've started to get more interested
in it. I'm pumped. I can't wait to see it down at Mid-Ohio.
And I'm very excited about the idea that we're going to be able to see it. It's going to be going on while we're there. It's pretty cool. You know?
I mean, and these should just be in the pit. And you should just be able
that's
to walk
the great
right
thing.
Up to like in Mid-Ohio, right. Like, you know, you can do that.
It's wide open, man. Go up and check them out. Yeah. I'm very excited about it. I think it's going to be cool. But I do hope it does things like, exactly. Well, Honda... Let's see a VTX 1800.
That's what I'm
saying. Let's see BMW show up with. Well, they've got their 1800, but that's a giant boxer motor. I don't think we're gonna be leaning that over.
They have a 1600 bagger. That might.
That's
compete.
True. The 16. Yeah. You're right. The 1600 bagger. That's a fantastic motor.
It's not a V twin. It's a straight six. But
but still,
I think it hold its own.
I absolutely.
Yeah,
think
I don't.
It hold
I don't. It's not limited to twins, right?
No,
it's just
not at all.
It's just a displacement thing, I'm sure, or something.
I'm sure it's. A bagger thing.
Yeah.
Because with this type of racing, the more the merrier.
That's what I would
right.
hope.
Yeah. I think there's a 71-page book of suggestions they call a rule book.
Mm-hmm.
And that unless somebody can say that you've egregiously gave yourself an unfair advantage, probably the more the merrier.
There's your answer.
What's S&S?
George Smith and Stanley Stankos.
Smith and Stankos.
Stankos.
Smith
and Stankos. I knew it was
you
a
got
Stank
it, buddy.
Something.
You nailed it.
There you go.
Smith and Stankos.
But you know, with everything, you get to win once before they outlaw you. So, you know.
This might
it's
not
never
be.
Never a war crime the first time.
Ask right? Canada.
Yep. That's a. But.
I don't see an acid dip in frames, though.
I'm super excited about it. I don't care.
You know, if they just leave it hands off, if nobody dies, it's fine.
Right. and the whole thing is if somebody does say, you know, big dick competition.
Yeah.
I'm going to go out and spend $92,000 so I can go out and play with the big boys. Cool.
Yeah.
Great. Let a privateer come out. Because motorcycle companies have been selling race bikes to people for years and years and years and years.
Yeah, right.
You know, the RC211V, you could buy one.
Well, how about this? Right. When I was at Pitt for Moto America, right, the dude who was in first place, this is a couple years ago for the series, on his way from Texas or whatever up to Pennsylvania, their trailer caught on fire and it burned his race bike down. So he had 24 hours to get a motorcycle together to make the next race. So they went, all they could do with the amount of time that they had was they went to the local Suzuki dealer. He was a Suzuki rider. He grabbed a GSXR 1000R. They brought it in. They had tires. They were able to pull the tires and stuff out of the trailer. So they were able to put the slicks and stuff in their wheels on it, a chain. But he basically raced the next day. Like, they removed all the mirrors and the lights and all that and, you know, did that.
Right.
But literally, they didn't have time to put race plastics. It had the actual fucking, like, Gixxer plastics. With the light, this is the dude who's in first place with the lights taped over, turn signals ripped off, whatever, and he took second.
Wow.
So to your point,
wow.
Like this is what's kind of interesting about this bagger thing is that, like, the sport bikes, I'm not talking MotoGP.
Right.
So we don't need an email saying about how amazing. I'm talking about, like, Moto America, where they're racing pretty much stock production bikes for the most part, right? With forks and upgrades like that. But, like, the stock race bikes are so fucking good that you're only talking a couple thousandths of a second behind the actual prepared bikes.
Yeah.
Like, they need the prepared stuff just to get that hundred thousandth of a second to win. So, like, that's what I find interesting about this is because, like, now you have these shitty bikes that aren't supposed to go fast. So now they have to do all this crazy innovation to make them go faster. So it's going to get interesting.
The street legal Honda RC211V or the RC213V, $184,000.
Wow. Well, currently?
No, it was 2016.
Okay, I was going to say. Like,
no, but in today's money, that'd be a lot more, right? But the point being that Honda proved that was a thing. Honda proved that there were people out there that wanted to buy a bike without a race team behind them and be competitive.
Mm-hmm.
And so in the interest of being able to do that, they did it, and it cost $184,000 in the year of our Lord, 2016.
And if you sell this to some guy, and he wins,
yeah,
well, it's still a win for you. It's
pretty fucking amazing for everyone.
One on a Honda.
It's just pretty goddamn amazing. The idea of privateers being able to buy factory-built race bikes, because, the factory has teams. The factory has tons of teams, and they have people that use their bikes on teams.
Yeah, because the Desmo Sedici RR is 72,500.
72,500.
I wonder if they do, so Dodge sells, like, what? The Dodge Demon track car or something, right? And it doesn't come with a title because it's going to
come with an off-road use only title.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right. That's what
come
I mean.
For an off-road use only title.
So you think that these are going to be the same?
Well, I do know that the Honda, the 213 was absolutely street legal motorcycle. So the 213 came with lights, turn signals, the whole thing.
Hmm.
It was ready to put on the street. Now, you didn't, right? Because it's still a racing motorcycle. It still has all the support requirements of a racing motorcycle. You're not gonna go out and put 40,000 miles on that bike. I don't think. But that's a motorcycle that if you had $184,000, you could just go fucking buy one, and it was DOT legal. Just go own it. Now, there aren't too many people that were actually putting it riding on the street. The idea was you buy it so that you could go race it.
Well, do you remember my buddy Mark? You remember Q?
Oh, yeah.
So he was, like, the Ducati technician, and so he had ties in. So when the old AMA Vintage Racing stopped, the team closed up, and he was able to buy one of those bikes. And so, you know, he paid, like, $58,000 for it.
Right.
But he was surprised. I mean, he wasn't surprised. He was a tech. But he got it, and he actually did make it road legal, but the gas was something like $12.95 a gallon because it had to use, like, some specific.
You could only use track.
Yeah, gas. And then it had no key. It started with a laptop and a computer controlled wheel that came with it that spun up to spin the back tire.
Yeah, that's
so. Yeah, you weren't just going to the bar.
That's a whole different thing.
You couldn't just bump start it.
Now you need the laptop.
You have to have the laptop.
Yeah.
Just like a Honda.
I think with those things, they're running on the ragged edge so much that it's like, okay, well, we've decided that this back tire should be at 26 RPM before we will engage the starter circuit to make sure we don't get a short start and push rods the way they're not supposed to be going.
Sure.
Right? Because nobody wants to do that.
There was a lot to it.
Whoa. I want to go off on a brief fucking oil thread.
Oh, boy.
There's no such thing.
Well, there is today.
Are we talking about Rotella already?
We are. Yes. In fact, we are. The reason we're talking about Rotella is because it's on sale. And
$15?
For $15.
For a gallon.
Oh, I'm there, dude.
Oh, okay. No.
T6 or T4?
Now, we're going to talk about that. Thanks for bringing that up. All right. So...
And it begins.
Well, no, I just, for the SAE stuff. So, tell me the SAE's in there. I don't give a shit what the numbers
are. So for all of you KLR guys out there listening.
No, it's not. And that's why I want to bring this up. Because have any of you guys discovered Bob the Oil Guy?
Yes.
Okay. So Bob the Oil Guy is just one of my favorite threads to get into. Because if you're ever having an online battle on the Ural forum, or on the BMW forum, or on the Triumph forum, or on the TW200 forum.
KLR.
Or on the KLR forum. Yes.
Right? DR650.
Yes.
Anywhere where everybody says the words, what oil should I use?
And the infamous oil thread starts.
Yep.
And the infamous oil thread starts, and you're going to go, well, here we fucking go. Just skip this. Just block this entire fucking conversation. But for a long time, the way that you could win the argument was to do what our shop had done, which we used Black Hawk oil analysis. So we would send a little urine sample of the oil that came out of the motorcycle in question, and we would fucking send it off, and they would send us back the results. And it would be the molecular, like, it would be amazing. It would tell you everything about the oil.
All the metals in it.
It was great.
Yeah.
But also there was a little comment section. The comment section was always my favorite part because the comment section, I'm still convinced that the guy that was writing the comment section for these Black Hawk oil analysis had been through a few of these conversations before.
Oh, I'm sure.
And he'd had about enough, right? So he would be like, maybe change the seals in this motor. Your oil has got more gas in it than the Exxon Valdez or whatever, right? Notice on line 43 that your oil is full of bronze and your oil is full of metal shavings. And like this motor needed a rebuild a half life ago, right? He always put great comments in there. And so we did an oil analysis out of a Royal Enfield motorcycle that had 0 miles on it, a bike that was out of the crate, like literally took it out of the fucking crate. I took a sample of the oil out of it and I sent it off. And I got my response back and they said, you tried to trick me. This came out of a brand new Royal Enfield.
Wow. Wow. That's pretty good.
And I was like, you're right. Now tell me why. He's like, yeah, because there are things that are in this oil that are illegal for use in the United States. There are things that they put into the oil to turn 3 quarts of oil into 4 quarts of oil, additives, that are not allowed in America, that we don't allow our EPA to even have them in the room, right? But they use them as filler material to stretch a gallon of oil, right? And it doesn't seem like much when you're like, oh, it turns... 3 quarts into 4 quarts. But when you're talking about 1.6 million motorcycles and you're saving a quart, you're saving literally a quart of oil per motorcycle. Well, then every fourth motorcycle, you got a free quart of oil. And the Indians will do that, right? So these get people know exactly what they're doing. And I was at the racetrack many, 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 many years ago. And I was one of these guys that would, like, I'd go out and do a race weekend, and I'd come back, and I would dutifully change my oil and all that stuff. And, you know, I would take the oil out of my motorcycle, and I would put it in my Ford Ranger, because the oil in my motorcycle had only been in my motorcycle for about 8 hours.
Right.
Right? Still good oil, right? And I was at racing, and was at SV650s, and I saw this guy next to me, and he literally busted out a bottle of Rotella T4. And I was like, you're putting your good oil in the old Rotella bottles, aren't you? And so, you know, people don't know what you're running. Like, you got some sneaky shit in there, and you're just putting it in the Rotella bottles to throw people off. And the guy was like, fuck no, I'm running Rotella. And I was like, T4, I was like, I think I need to tell you this, but T4 is not synthetic. And he was like, no, it's not synthetic. No, that's T6. And I said, yes, it is. And he says, well, what are you running? And I was like, a Motul, you know, expensive, $19 a liter oil. And he's like, why? And I was like, well, because I don't want my motor to blow up. He goes, what you doing with that motor? And I was like, is it a stock? It's a stock motor. And he goes, then why wouldn't you run God's oil? And I was like, oh, man, you're fucking with me now. And so, yeah, you can go on Bob the Oil Guy and participate in a conversation where the guy who knows more about oil than anybody else on the planet will tell you why this shit works.
Yep.
And especially for some of us who have really fucking old motorcycles, if we have a really fucking old motorcycle, you don't want the blue jug. You don't need the blue jug.
No.
You don't need the T6. You don't need the synthetic. In fact, a lot of people have said that in older motorcycles, the T6 is sneaking past seals and going places it might not should go. Very fucking interesting. But you know what's funny about this particular oil? Is if you buy this, you don't have to buy it at Tractor Supply Company. You can buy it anywhere. But the price right now at Tractor Supply Company is fucking great. That's $3.40 a quart. Mm-hmm. That's Wolf's Head money. That's the fakey shit at the truck stop money.
Yep.
That's some seriously cheap money. And if you are the type of person that likes to change your oil seasonally, right? Well, maybe you don't need to have $30 worth of oil in your crankcase. Mm-hmm. And maybe you could have $8 worth of oil in your crankcase instead. This is kind of great stuff. And the more that I went into the deep dive on it the past couple of days, the more I was like, okay, I think the podcast needs to be reminded about that.
Yep.
I think that because the oil wars are awful.
But then there's like the guys that they're not participating in the oil wars.
Yeah.
But like they do proof of concept where like they have their DR650 that they've been running T4 in since the day that they got it. Mm-hmm. And now they're at 128,000 miles, you know, and like they've documented on Adventure Rider every day that they've ridden, you know, so like it's like a 348 page long thread of them documenting how good the oil is. So, I mean, it's out there.
Every year since 2017, the Bob is the Oil Guy forum, they will do this. And on an anniversary basis, where one time a year they will grab this thread and throw it back up again. Mm-hmm. Because it is funny, because it's gotten a life of its own now where it just like casually goes in and nukes oil threads all over the place. But what's funny is they have now gotten to the point where they're getting into really weird technical jargon, like the gaseous vapor, NOAC tests and stuff like that. And they're like, okay, it's a GTL, but it's not of this and it's not of that. And people who legitimately know about oil have entered the room.
Yeah.
And they've got this cumulative data. They've just kept adding and adding, and it's all additive. And it's just gotten to the point where they're just like, okay, well, here we go. And to people that ride motorcycles, at our shop, we have Bell Ray and giant 55-gallon drums that we sell to our customers because the customer mindset says, I want to have motorcycle oil in my motorcycles.
This is why Motul has an existence.
Exactly. Right.
You know, because every Vespa comes with little AGIP stickers, but you can't buy
it. They used to.
They still don't. They don't know.
They don't know, right? They don't know. But so now they have Motul stickers.
Yeah.
So they're it's true. And Aprilia products the same.
You want to spend $12 a quart, right?
Well, you got to support your dealer.
Right.
And $12 a quart. Right. Where the fuck have you been? It's $19 a quart.
God.
It's literally $19 to $21 a quart right now. Yeah. It is not
inflation. I'm sorry.
It is really, really expensive. I promise you, tires are more expensive than you think they are.
Oh, and
oil is more expensive than you think.
Well, yeah, because we were talking about Duros the other day, and they have doubled in price.
I promise
Duros have doubled.
Man, we do this shit at the, we do deep dives on this shit at the shop all the time. And what do you run in your bikes?
I follow the owner's manual to the letter. Uh-huh. If I have a BMW, I put BMW oil in it. If I have a Honda, I put Honda oil in it.
You do.
And I consider it cheap insurance because realistically, I do 1 to 2 oil changes a year on each bike. All that oil adds up to maybe $150.
Right.
And I know what that bike was engineered for. I know what the oil was engineered for. I trust the quality control of BMW or Honda, wherever they're sourcing their oils. And I buy what's in the manual.
Right. So. Yeah, I was curious about that because you do go through some oil.
I do.
Yeah, you go through some oil. And on, if there's oil in my world, if there's a motorcycle that I own and you open it up, I guarantee it has Rotella in it. I actually buy my own stock because I wait until Walmart has the 5 gallon or the 2.5 gallon, which actually I actually learned it was cheaper to buy it that way because they ship it for free. And so I bought a whole grip of T6 and I bought a whole grip of T4. And if my motorcycle's over 15 years old, I run the T4.
Yeah, because the surest way to know that you're going to have to replace your rear main seal in a BMW or Moto Guzzi is to run synthetic.
Absolutely.
Or any modern oil for that matter.
So here's the weird thing. So I, for a long time, on most of my bikes would run Rotella T6 because they were mostly newer. And on the old ones, I'd do T4.
Yep.
But on Amazon, man, and I hate to promote Amazon, but once in a while, to Pete's thing, like, so for my Kawasaki and my Honda, which are my newest bikes and the ones that I like a lot, I kind of did that. I was like, well, I'm going to put Honda oil in it, right? But like on Amazon, they'll sell a Honda oil change kit that comes with a Honda oil filter, a Honda O-ring, all 4 oil things, of gloves, and something else.
They're a hell of a deal.
But it's almost cheaper.
$30?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, right. It's like you almost can't not buy it. Yep. And it's shipped overnight, and it's there the next day, and you're ready to go.
At our shop, we've gone to the Harley-Davidson oil change kits.
Oil change in a box.
Oil change in a box.
Yeah.
And we've gone to it because when you break it down, it actually costs a hell of a lot less.
It is. It's crazy.
You know, Parts Unlimited has sort of mastered that. BMW's oil change kit, especially when you get into weird shit like 0W30s, when you get into 0W30s, when you get into oils that are not going to be in your, I always joke, but the number's between 5 and 40. So you're like, what kind of oil should I have on my bike? I'm like, well, anything between 5 and 40. And the customers just go, and I'm like, look, the bottom number should be between 5 and 40. And the top number should be between 5 and 40.
Yep.
And they still go, I'm like, Jesus fucking Christ. Look, the bottom number is going to be between 5, 10, or 15. Okay? The top number is going to be 30 or 40. You're fine.
Right, and with the motorcycle,
can I use 15W40? You can. Do you ride when it's 19 degrees out?
That's
if you ride when it's 19 degrees out, you probably shouldn't use 15W40, especially if you're like in a Moto Guzzi. It's not going to want to start. Moto Guzzi uses 10W60. But I have enough experience with Moto Guzzis to tell you that 10W40 works fine, right? 10W60 is not easy oil to find. 0W40 is not easy oil to find. 0W30 is not. Now that we're getting into these crazy extreme viscosity oils.
Well, that's because most modern hybrids require a zero. Like they recommend, somebody recommended one time I use a 0W40 in the element. I looked at it and went, no. No.
Well, that's the funny part though, but like a lot of the trucks now, like my dumb Dodge, now all the new Dodges are OW20.
Right. Yeah.
And like I think they realized because before they'd be like, they'd have a lot of issues. Like my truck was throwing rocker arms. Because it had to heat the oil up to get the oil up into the head. Why don't they just start with a thinner oil before it gets to temperature?
Yeah, absolutely.
Right.
Absolutely. With the customer base that we have at the shop, I've had to learn I can no longer give them fun, sexy, creative answers. I now have to give them things
like... You made
like,
me think, Phil!
And I'm like, man, dude, there's a thing. And I'm like, give me a second. I'm going to come up with it. Read the fucking manual. Right? And I have to say that at the shop every day. I'm like, well, read the fucking manual. Well, I want you to tell me. You are too lazy to read your own manual. You want me to tell you the answer. But you understand the error factor of me trying to remember what oil 200 different motorcycles take should be taken into strong consideration. Because I would rather tell you straight to your face, I cannot give you a guaranteed result. I can tell you the guidelines within which I operate, but that's religion. You want numbers. So open your fucking owner's manual and look inside of it. And they go, but I've never opened my owner's manual.
Right.
And well, it's time to start.
Well, I was going to say, like, so you would think that, like, so from like the 60s and 70s right. and 80s, when people had to actually, like, if they lost their manual, they might have to order one, or they'd have to go to a library to get the information. And now in 2024, it's like whatever motorcycle right. you fell upon that day, yes. you could absolutely. Pull out your device and find out what oil to put in it in fucking 1 second.
Yeah. Or yeah. And you know what that thread's going to tell you?
Rotella.
Rotella.
No, but yeah. But I'm saying, are you going to go to a thread, or are you going to go? You can just find the manual online or anything.
I'm going to give you guys a secret tip.
Have you Googled anything lately?
What?
You're going to find what you're looking for immediately.
I need to know what oil to put in my TW200. Okay, look it up. You've got cancer. Right? WebMD says you've got cancer, right? And you need boner pills.
And Rotella.
Right. You know, I can't find the answer. I'm going to go ask Uncle Phil.
Right. Yep. Right. Exactly. I got frustrated, so I asked you. Here's the other thing. If your motorcycle is from year of 19, I think it's 79 or 80, maybe. Yeah. If you take the seat off, by law, there's a tag in there that tells you what kind of spark plug you're supposed to run. It's an EPA sheet. So you have an EPA sticker in your bike. It tells you what kind of spark plug you're supposed to run. It tells you, strangely enough, what the advance and retard timing is on the damn thing.
Which you can't set anyway.
Which you can't do anything about anyway. But it also tells you what oil you're supposed to run.
Yep.
And it literally is on every tag, every motorcycle. So when you've got a motorcycle that you bought in the United States of America, you're going to find a motorcycle EPA tag. And your EPA tag or EPA sticker, that's going to have that very secret, very hard to get information literally on your fucking motorcycle.
And think about all the old Hondas and stuff. It was pressed into the fucking oil cap.
Yeah, absolutely.
It would literally say 10W40 or whatever.
Yep. I mean,
yeah.
So stuff like that, when, you know, if you are at a loss and you're not sure exactly what to do, the information will be there. You just need to find it or open your goddamn manual. Because at least with the manual, like Steve's saying, Pete's saying, it's always going to be right.
And if you don't, for example, if you've bought your bike secondhand and you don't have the manual anymore to read, go online.
Yep.
It will be there. And most manufacturers will actually have it on their website. You have to search for owner's manual, whatever the hell you have.
Sure. Absolutely.
And it will be there.
Yeah.
I think by law, they actually have to offer reprints.
I think that it has to be made available to you because it is an EPA thing. It's an EPA violation if you don't have access to it.
One more word on oil, too. Like, sometimes people want to put synthetic in just because they think synthetic is better than dyno juice.
Right.
If your clutch is not set up for synthetic and you put some super slippery synthetic, your clutch might not work right.
Welcome to the world of BMWs and Moto Guzzis again.
Yeah. Because as soon as that rear main seal lets go, all that oil,
I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about if you have a wet clutch that's supposed to be bathed in oil and you don't bathe it in the proper oil, the clutch doesn't work right.
Yeah.
Because the oil is too slippery for the clutch to engage.
Because older Hondas would, if you put synthetic in them, they would, old Vespas will swell if you put the wrong oil in it.
So this is off of my Yamaha TW200.
Yep.
One of the most complicated motorcycles on the planet. And, it is a tractor, right?
Yep.
But on this sticker, here's some important things that are on the sticker. First thing, it literally tells you engine oil, SAE 20W40 or 10W30. It gives you two choices, right? It tells you 91 octane research octane number, 91 octane. Now, 91 RON balances out to 87 RM2 because you have RON plus MON divided by 2, okay? So your MON number is going to be about 84. Your RON number is going to be 91. You add them together, you divide it by 2. RM2 is the method by which we determine octane in the United States. 87 octane RM2. So yay, we're good. So this right here is telling you not to put expensive gas in a TW200. Here's my favorite part, the valve lash. It tells you the valve lash in inches and in millimeters on the intake and on the exhaust. It tells you the spark plug gap. It tells you the idle speed. This is not in the owner's manual. This is on a sticker on the motorcycle. So it turns out if you do look for just a little bit, a little tiny bit, you're going to find out a lot of cool shit about your motorcycle, and it's literally stamped on the fucker, or it's in a sticker, right? I love how on the bottom, when it gives you all this information, it also says sea owner's manual. it'll also tell you things on there like the year of the bike, and it'll also tell you the model number for the bike. So if you're not sure looking up stuff, always look at your motorcycle. Yeah. Look on the bike itself. Because what you're going to find is kind of shocking, all the stickers that they put on there. Unless you're somebody who takes the heat gun and takes all the stickers off your bike, in which case, go back to the manual.
Yeah. Like the amount of stickers and stamped logos and everything that's on you, the amount of information that is required. Mm. And this goes back to our earlier discussion about Chinese models and everything else, and European model bikes, is imports don't have, illegal imports don't have this information, which is one of the problems we run into.
Yep.
American market bikes have more information stamped and printed and stickered and the no pits sticker on the Vespas is always a big joke, but that is because at one point somebody got sued over this.
Somebody put a cat in a pet carrier, I'm sure.
But everything on it, like the
cat cooker.
It literally pet says warmer. It literally the pet
warmer. Right in the pet warmer.
But because of all of the steps we've had to go through, because the EPA was created in 1974, all of the steps that we've had to go through legally is the result of why all of these stickers exist.
Dumb people. People losing in court. People winning in court.
I don't think it's because we're dumb. I think it's because we're litigious.
No, but did you ever think that that's what got us to where we are right now as a country, with everybody hating each other and stuff? It's because the dumb people didn't die. They didn't use, like, we lost a whole generation of people throwing fucking hair dryers in fucking sinks and stuff, man.
What did somebody say? It was the absence of the bicycle helmets. So it's like bicycle helmets and mulch around the playground equipment has made us stupid.
No, you know what did it? You know what finally cured our society and allowed dumb people to procreate? They took jarts off the shelves.
Jarts was guaranteed to take. You're gonna lose a few with jarts. Back to those EPA stickers. I thought it'd be fun if I pulled an EPA sticker up off a brand new motorcycle.
Yeah.
Just because this is fun. Here we have. So when I was looking at the Harley Davidson, when you were asking me a question about the Springer, and I didn't have an answer for you right away. So what I did was I immediately put my head down there and I looked at all the stickers, because the whole frame of your motorcycle is
stickers,
right?
Yeah.
And I think it's fucking great that on a brand new Indian Scout, that it literally tells you the intake valve clearance, the exhaust valve clearance, the spark plug gap. It's all right there. That information is there. Something that, you know, even if you're like, oh, well, you know, hey, on this motorcycle, you're going to have to adjust the valves kind of once. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't want to be a cock, but these are really good motorcycles. They're really nicely built.
Yeah.
And at about 5,000 miles, they need an adjustment.
On an SV650, the service check for the valves is 21,000 miles.
Right. Yeah, and I'm not joking when we talk about, there are motorcycles that exist on this planet that, even though they don't have hydraulically adjusted valves, that you might need one valve adjustment. In your course of ownership of the vehicle in 40,000 miles, right? You might need one. When I did my SV, at about 15,000 miles, and I was like, man, I hope this is good, because shim and buck is a pain in my ass.
Oh, absolutely.
Right? And it was fucking right on. Yep. And I was like, oh, that's pretty great. That's cool.
Well, my BMW F800 gets valve adjustments every 12,000 miles. Right. I've done it 3 times, and every time it's been in spec.
Yep.
And that's a Longshin motor.
And that's a Longshin motor. Yep. Exactly. That's a Chinese motor that BMW's been using for a very long time.
Oh, yeah.
Various different permutations of it. Because we used to say, and that was the thing, we have to be careful. Tom and I have to be very careful, because we used to say, that's a Chinese motor you got there in your Janus there, Mr. Chris. Your Janus has got a Chinese motor in it. So that means it'll be okay, but you got to change the oil an awful lot, and you got to adjust the valves all the goddamn time. Tom, how much were the Janus's valves out of adjustment?
They were not.
Both of them.
They were not. And Chris Smith's. Mm-hmm. I've done 3 Janus motors now, and none of them were out. They were all right in spec.
And so this is a pushrod motor, 250 cc's, dragging around a Chris Smith-shaped person.
Yep.
And he rode it from
East
Indiana to here.
And
so you could understand, like,
Well, that's
that
the
these valves snugged up a bit.
That's the high compression head too that he's got. He changed the head on.
Yeah, he did performance mod.
So he's even changed the head. So after they did that and did the torque and everything else, because I had to go through it all again because it was leaking the valve cover gasket was wrong. But even after all that, the valves were still in specs.
Yeah, and to me, that I just want to make sure people understand that.
Well, when I was doing fly,
things have gotten a lot better.
When I was doing fly scooter, which is when I was doing fly scooter, which was Z-Nen, not Zongshen, because I know that's a difference. But it was Z-Nen. When you took them out of the crate, same with Red Streak, you had to take them out of the crate, immediately set the valves, and change the oil, because the oil was the shipping oil, which, again, like you were talking about with the Indian, was cheap oil.
Really bad.
But
really
if you did that, if you set the valves, if you changed the oil, you'd get 10,000 miles out of that motor.
I totally agree.
If you didn't, you would see it at 1,200.
1,200, yeah, 1,200.
And the top end would be burned up.
Yeah. We've actually said with some of those bikes, they would come into our shop, and they'd still be on the temp tag, and the motor was fucked. And you're like, wow, that's great. You need a motor, and your temp tag is still valid. And it's a scary thing to see that exists.
I've been seeing posts about the new Harleys like that. A lot of people taking them with 3,000 and 4,000 miles on them, taking them in.
Dan's friend, his bike was 1 month out of warranty.
Oh, yeah, well, that's what. So I just saw this thread today of this guy.
On a Milwaukee 8.
This guy's got 2,000 miles on a 2024. He's had it to the shop four times, and now they won't talk to him anymore, and the bike won't run.
No.
That's getting bad, man.
It's really bad. And I think that even Harley-Davidson at this point, which is, this is their flagship motor.
Yeah.
This is the one that they were saying, this is going to do it. This is going to fix it. And I thought maybe we might have said something about this before, and kind of the problems they were having with this. But I want to revisit it.
It's got exasperated or exasperated.
Harley Davidson will not admit to these problems.
Right.
But a company that does nothing but make luggage, Viking bags, and they make affordable fucking luggage. I don't know if you ever had any Viking bags. They're not like leather, chrome ensconced things. Viking bags are work fucking. They're like workman-like bags. That shit's strong. Mm. It ain't fancy pants, but it's strong shit. We've put Viking bags on a bunch of stuff. But here's what I wanted to bring up. Here's a company that is not Harley Davidson, but they make their bread and butter selling bags to Harley Davidson people, right? And since they feel like they want to be good citizens, they feel like it might be in somebody's best interest to say, let's take our cumulative knowledge about the motorcycle industry, let's put it all in one place, and let's say this is verifiable information because we're talking to people that are Harley Davidson mechanics at Harley Davidson dealerships. We are talking to customers every fucking day, and we're tired of hearing about it, so let's compile it all in one place. And they literally went through and they made a checklist. So if you go to vikingbags.com, in their blogs section, they have this amazing, for lack of a better term, guide to let you know what could be going wrong with your motorcycle and things you should be aware of to get that son of a bitch into the dealer while you're still under warranty, so you don't end up like Dan's friend who's sitting there with a brick right now. And when you saw that piston on his bike, it was pretty clear that no oil was getting into that motor. And that piston ground itself to shit.
Tried to become one.
There was no way any rings were moving anywhere on that thing. It was fucked. But I really do love that
That's cool.
That this company did this, and I've used this as a reference many times. They talk about the Milwaukee 8, they talk about the 107, they talk about the 114, right? So they're covering both ways that motor comes. They tell you all the different bikes it comes in. They tell you about the problems it's having, the oil sumping issues. There's all kinds of issues that people are doing, and I promise you, when this first started happening and we had our customers, they're like, I just got a brand new Harley, but I'm having all kinds of problems with it. And people did not want to talk about, you know, nobody at the dealership would say, oh, there's a real thing about that. Nope, there's a real thing about that.
Yeah.
And then this guy went to the trouble of telling you, yep, the only way to resolve the Milwaukee 8's engine oil sumping problem is to install a new oil pump, which is going to be between $300 and $700, including labor costs. So it's about $700 to fix a problem that Harley Davidson that came as original equipment in your motorcycle.
Yeah, that's fucked up.
It is
fucked up. You know, this goes back to my whole thing of Harley. Harley doesn't exist to make motorcycles. They exist to make money.
But no.
Now they're just...
Isn't that every company?
Well, no. Yeah. They're not even trying to build a competent product anymore. They're just putting trash on
the market. Let me ask you this. Now that this is getting out and knowing that, do you think that the ones that are hitting the floor right now are still being the old pumps put in them?
So, I don't...
It's not just a pump. Yeah, so if you read this, you're going to realize that pump, oil sumping is literally issue number one.
Oh. Yeah.
They cover seven issues in this. Okay? So, well done, you fixed the oil pump, mm-hmm. right? That's great.
You've made it to level two.
You've made it to level two. Right, exactly. And here's the thing. When these first came out on the forums, everybody was saying, well, you got too much oil in there. And remember, with the Harley Davidson, you check the oil while the bike's on the side stand.
Yes.
You check the transmission and the final drive while the bike is upright.
Right.
And it's confusing to some people. And they were saying, well, the problem is that people have too much oil in their oil bag, too much oil in their oil tank.
Yeah.
So they were like, okay, well, don't have so much oil in there because it's wet sumping. So they were telling... The internet was telling
the people internet
to not have so much oil in their oil tank. Mm. So they would literally say, kind of go low on the oil. Go low on the oil.
And make sure it's Rotella. Yeah,
right. Well, Phil.
Do you think that Harley would deny a warranty claim because it didn't have Harley Davidson oil in it?
Exactly. I bet you they would.
Pete's exactly right. Now, transmission.
I'm just telling you what the internet's telling you.
Yeah. Right.
And transmission on these motors... They tell you the biggest problem with the transmission is they're underfilled. Mm-hmm. So now we got two different channels. So now people are saying there's too much oil in the motor oil and there's not enough oil in the transmission oil. Okay, wait. If you tell me that the final drive oil is going to have a different level too, I'm going to get really upset. Well, I'm glad you should ask about that because when you get to number four, right, now we have that. So there's this thing, right? This is it. And the other thing that was funny was we were talking about temperatures like below freezing. People have said that they've hooked car batteries on really thick cables, like 8-gauge cables, to their Harley Davidson with a fully charged battery, and they couldn't get it to start.
We dealt with this last week.
That was on
an old motor.
That was a twin cam 88 motor.
If I saw this many problems on a new motorcycle, I would not buy this motorcycle.
Well, there you go. So
this is like Subaru in 98.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So they're talking about you have a fuel injector problem. You can modify with a booster plug kit. Right. There's a lot of things. And when you look at the pros and cons of this engine, and this is why I want to read it because it's fucking hilarious.
Oh, wait, is this the engine that comes in the $60,000?
Yes.
Oh yeah.
Evo Super Glide.
All of the above. Wow.
The answer
is yes.
There's a pro to this trash bag.
Milwaukee engine pros: better overall performance. Cons: oil sumping, smooth riding experience, oil leakage, 4 valves per cylinder, overheating. Produces more power and torque, cold starting problems. Good acceleration, produces vibrations. Less noise, produces irritating noises. Less heat, faulty fuel pump design. Single cam chain, faulty oil filters. Soul satisfying exhaust note, now they're reaching. Can only be installed on a limited number of models. Comes with an assistant slipper clutch, gear oil issues, rubber mounted, engine stalling. Single internal counterbalancer, improper air and fuel mixture. By the way, that one is a big deal.
Oh, yeah.
Guys are burning up their motor, and we saw Dan's friend's motor clearly died of excessive heat.
Yeah.
It died of heat. clogged air filters, carbon deposits in engine sludge, engine produces clouds of smoke, engine misfires. There's problems. There's a lot of problems.
What was that Chinese company that's building the Sportster now? No, the one that took all the old tooling for the old Sportster.
QJ.
Yeah. Don't buy this. Buy the QJ.
Yeah.
I was going to say the 300cc Sportster that you have in your shop right now has none of these problems.
Correct.
But their 1200cc version of it doesn't have the problems either. So you could have it as a Sportster 300, but you could also have the Sportster 1200.
Really?
Because it's the old Harley tooling.
You know, I used to joke about Harley. I used to joke about Harley's being a clown shoe, but this bike is apparently a clown shoe.
This is that problem. This is that the thing that Harley Davidson, I think, has always done is they've always said, we need the next new motor, but the primary operation number one is it must be bigger.
Yeah.
You cannot produce a Harley motor that is smaller. You will die. You'll burn in hell.
Yeah.
And they found that out with the V-Rod because they brought a motor out in the form of a V-Rod that was 1,000 cc's, but it made all the power and all the torque and all the good things. It was great. And they brought it out, and everybody went,
That's 1,000 cc's
is smaller.
What's that guy, Tim Allen?
How many inches is that?
Tim Allen?
1,000 cc's is smaller than my girlfriend's Sportster. And that moment, the marketing was done. It was over. They could not do that. They had built a wonderful, high-performance, fun, and I've been through a couple of them.
I eyeballed one for a while, man. Yeah, they're nice.
And I kind of like that motorcycle, I'll admit it. And it was really good at going, oh, you know, and it was cool. But the people, the Harley people, were like, you did notice it was liquid-cooled. Yeah, of course we noticed it was liquid-cooled. That's how you make power. Liquid-cooled makes power. Give me an air-cooled motor. 750 cc's. Give me a liquid-cooled motor, the exact same cc's. Liquid-cooled motor is going to be far more powerful because it operates within tighter tolerances. It operates within a narrower heat range. So it's going to be better. It's going to be higher compression.
This is what everybody else has known since 1957. Cool.
And then the second thing they said was, well, it's not really a V-twin, is it, anymore? Yes, it is. Well, it's not pushrod motor anymore. No, it's not, because that was archaic 50 fucking years ago.
Yeah.
Right? And, well, but it's... And they just hated it. They hated it. And the marketing department said, but it's designed by Porsche. And all the doctors and lawyers who had Harleys and Porsches still went, no, but the guys in the black leather jackets say that it has to be American.
Yeah.
And they literally, guys who owned Porsches and Harleys, were the only people that were going to be like, well, that's good. Porsche's good. I like Porsche. We have one of our customers debadged his V-Rod completely and replaced it all with Porsche badges. Mm-hmm. Pretty fucking cool. Looks great.
Yeah, that's actually a good idea.
Pretty tight.
Oh, it's the 924 of motorcycles.
He just washed the Harley Davidson right off of it.
Probably the best thing to do for
washed the potato juice right off of it. It was fine. But that's the thing. And yeah, so here we are, right? Would I want to buy one? We talked about that.
Oh, hell no.
You know, our listener from last week.
I mean, we've been talking up Harley lately, which for me is one of those things.
Harley, that's all we're doing.
Well, no. I mean, we're talking about the sports for the past couple of weeks. We've been talking about the value that they have become. And this is not a value.
Well, nobody in this room is threatening to buy.
No, a 107 or a Milwaukee 8. Yeah, no,
nobody is. Mr. Sleepy.
Yeah.
Do you have any updates on the Springer project?
I mean, everything's ready to go. I just have to. So here's the thing. So I was going to ask you. I was going to talk to you. So I got the wiring. I'm figuring it out and finishing it in the back there. But I've noticed that there's no tunnel channel or anywhere to put any wires in there. So I was thinking about. So check this out. I'm talking as much as I can talk, and I'm getting rid of as much as I can get rid of. But there's like the nubs that you have to have, right? So on the outside of my Hyundai for the last 2.5 years.
Mm-hmm.
I was buying wood, and this guy hit my trailer and knocked my trailer into my car and then took off, and it was winter, and I said, whatever. So I had a hole and a dent, right?
Right. Oh, yeah.
So I got me some of that that weather seal or whatever you call it, the slappy sauce sealer or what is it?
Flex seal.
Okay, flex seal. And I got the flex seal tape, and I put it on my car 2.5 years ago, and it is still there, and it's kept the water out of the little hole in the back in the trunk. So I was thinking, once I tighten up all these wires, that might be like a nice fender insulation. Put it up there to hold the small nubs that you have to have in the thing. Yeah. It'll give it a layer of protection.
Sure, why not?
Keep it out of the...
Why not? Why not?
So when that's done, I mean, at that point, cool. It's going to be your thing. The mirrors have been mirrified.
Did you look into the bushings for the Springer front end?
I'm starting to.
You should.
Yeah, that's the next plan. I got some feelers out on that.
Trust me. It's not... They sell a kit.
Yeah.
They sell a kit. And if you need me to, I think I can order that kit through for Parts Unlimited, so I'll pay for it.
Put a kit on that bitch.
Yeah, I think maybe we should do that. I think I should open up my drag specialties
book do it.
And get you that kit. Because
it's a little wiggly.
Well, it just makes it so much better.
Yeah.
You know. You want to see the Springer. You don't want to hear the Springer.
Right.
Right.
Well, and that's the thing. Like, I was expecting Zerts fittings, and there isn't. So I was like, well, I guess we're doing bushings.
Bushings as it is. Yeah, absolutely. So, listener mail.
I love mail.
Oh, you missed last year, John.
I'm gonna go on the record right now and say I think we're gonna get some mail over the oil issues too.
Yeah, we are.
Oh yeah,
so that's gonna be.
Yeah, it's good. It's bait, basically.
Yeah, well, here's what's gonna happen. Here's what's gonna happen. The word's gonna get out, and people that have never listened to the podcast, it's gonna be like the Joe Rogan thing with everybody that gets mad that doesn't listen to it, and they say it's the. You're just gonna get guys that just were told that we talked about oil. So they still haven't listened to the podcast, but your email is going to be sent at a broadcast level out to all the oil aficionados just to attack the podcast and talk about oil.
Right. Johnny Mac, what town in PA did you grow up in?
That's personal information right there.
It's okay. It's a podcast listener.
I don't live there anymore.
It's a Patreon. Yeah.
So you can feel free. What you find at my home that I grew up in, you might not like because it'll be my older brother. And he is also a force to contend with.
Yeah, he is.
So good luck. But I grew up in the town of North Apollo.
North Apollo.
Apollo.
Is there a South Apollo?
There's an Apollo.
There's a regular Apollo.
And there's a North Apollo.
Okay. Yeah. All right.
We're up above the junkyard.
I live just above.
Were you snooty because the wind blows right? North? Were the North Apollians snootier?
North Apollo might be a little nicer than Apollo proper.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Good to know.
We're up the hill a little bit. A little.
Up the holler.
And I'm telling you, that is apropos to nothing. That is literally a podcast listener question. I was like, okay.
Yeah.
But
I'll
there,
throw that shit out there.
And in Apollo, there is Astronaut Way and a bunch of stuff like that. And we celebrate the moon landing celebration. There's a little, you know.
So was Apollo named?
I don't think so.
After the space program?
I don't.
Or somebody's like, let's just lean into it.
I think that's more of a lean in.
As opposed to going the whole Greek thing, we're going to go.
I'll have to look that up, but I think Apollo was always named Apollo, but you know, in the Pittsburgh area, there's also Moon Township and some other
stuff. I think in the 60s, they were sitting there with this town called Apollo.
Yeah.
And they were just like, man, we're going to need something to really bring some revenue in here. Yep. And they turned on the TV and they're like, and the next moon mission is going to be named Apollo. And they were like, yes,
fine.
We are in.
Apollo sits on the Kiski-Minicus River, which is one of the fastest flowing rivers in Pennsylvania.
And you grew up swimming in that thing?
It was radioactive.
And that explains a lot.
Did you dip?
Yes. And yes. No, actually, nobody ever swam in it. I did walk across it one time. I think my mom was trying to get us killed in 76 or something like that. It froze over, and we walked out on it. Had we broken through that, we would have been gone.
Gone.
Just
moving out.
You know, that really explains a lot of shit, because if you've ever met John's dad, he's 4'7". So,
could be an issue.
Just call me ET, the extra testicle. I have three testicles.
So that was first one. Just randomly.
Yeah.
Hey, Moto Degenerates. This is Marshall from North Carolina. I'm finally going to make to VMD this year.
Yes.
I got my camping pass and everything. Any chance you could share some hints and tips for first time attendees on the podcast? Looking forward to meeting you clowns.
I think we have videos. We have past shows. I'm sure we'll do another one soon.
We do an AMA Vintage Days follow-up for the past 12 years.
And then about 4 weeks before, we start to get into the gear. And
your music video was awesome after that.
So it really, really
was. Oh, yeah.
The music video is probably
that was
my
way to go.
We're going to have to redo that, too, for this year with everybody.
I think we can.
Stuff. Yeah,
we absolutely can. We can have... four-part harmony. But
I would say in about 4 weeks beforehand, we give a pretty good breakdown and stuff, getting ready.
But
he's got the main things covered. He's got the things he needs for now.
Yeah. Okay, so here's what he needs for now. He needs a small bike to ride around on.
Mm-hmm. For sure.
Or to be able to get one when he gets there.
Sure.
So either have one being brought for you or have one going in, right?
You don't want to be on foot there.
No. It's not a bad walk, but it's not one everybody wants to do.
No.
If I do that walk one time, that's too many.
No, and plus, you're just missing. Yeah. You're missing everything.
Right, you're missing everything. You're spending all that time traveling.
But the walkers would say, no, you're missing everything riding around. If you really want to cover everything, you really got to walk and get down there.
The deals are in the middle aisle, I'm not going to lie.
But here's the thing.
And you miss those when you're riding past them.
This is what you can beat in a walker's argument in a second. Because you say you're missing, but like, unless you like, okay, unless you're the 10-year-old kid that rides from 4 a.m. until 4 p.m. right. Like, yeah. if you're a normal person, you're usually just riding to somewhere to go right. watch something,
right?
Like, or talk or do whatever. So
that really comes down to the swap meet. There are old codgers who are like, you got to walk it if you want to find anything. And
that's right.
Honestly, I don't really want to find anything.
That's why I go in there every year.
I do have a lot of stuff.
I'm trying to lose things.
With one thing. And if I see that one thing, I'll probably buy it.
Right.
But if I don't, then I'm not buying shit.
Then I'll get it off of eBay.
Right. And you know what else? Yeah. This year, there's going to be a super strong focus on emptying the warehouse.
Yeah.
So I thought I had a bunch of shit, and then he showed up, and he's going to have his own fucking yeah. boots, because he's got a lot of crap, too.
Yep.
So we're going to have to be renting trailers to take with us behind trucks
yeah.
to Mid-Ohio so that we can offload stuff. And I'm going to have to spend a lot less time getting sunburned in the booth, or I'm sorry, getting drunk in the tent, the FEMA camp. And I might have to actually be out selling shit for once.
You know? If I don't move bikes before, then I'm probably taking a bunch myself.
You know, exactly. You know, I'm gonna put this out there.
Yeah.
And she has offered it already. We put Becky in the booth.
Good.
Because great. She has no emotional interest in any of it. That's she good. Wants it all gone.
Yeah. She's the best person to sell it.
Oh yeah. That's
and then we go back to the law of the $5 tarp, the $10 tarp, and the items you have to take when you buy something from yes. the $5 or the $10 tarp. It's perfect. Nobody leaves empty-handed.
Her goal is to get rid of all of it. She good. Didn't care. She didn't care what it is.
Perfect. She's on the clock.
She's
right?
on the clock.
Okay. So that's cool. But that was really good. Now we have a new Patreon at the legend level. The fucking legend.
You get all the jokes.
Oh fuck yeah! And he's coming in swinging.
Okay.
All right. He's Renee this week. Renee has, there's been massive box stuff.
Stuffing a lot of boxes.
This week's been a lot. We've got a lot of outgoing.
She's going to be sore stuffing that box.
So much box stuffing. So much box stuffing. So but anyway,
you build up a tolerance after a while, don't you?
She's busy. She's got a lot of other shit she has to do.
Yeah.
Okay.
So yeah. when she's getting told, like, you got to stuff box on the clock. Okay. Elliot. Elliot Dumont. Hey guys, super stoked to finally be able to contribute to this podcast.
Hell yeah.
Y'all have been part of my very new motorcycle career every step of the way. My employee and I rock out to you guys on Sundays while we wrench on bicycles. I own a bicycle nice. Shop in old dry heat capital of the world, Tucson, Arizona. Mm-hmm. Your advice and general shenanigans have inspired me to get after it on the moto. Mm-hmm. I have a Royal Enfield Himalayan and I use the shit out of that thing. From delivering bicycles for the shop, touring with my girlfriend, or just getting into silly fun out in the desert. I do have a technical question for you. What are your thoughts on riding at high RPM or riding at lower RPM? Should I be spending more time at the high end of the tachometer or not? Is it good or bad for my engine? Thanks for doing what you do, and I'll get a bottle of Delbach whiskey headed your way shortly. Cheers, you filthy bastards, and ride fast and take chances. Elliot and the crew at Roadrunner Bicycles.
Nice. Okay, so first of all, Roadrunner bicycles, so they're probably... So I went riding. I used to go to the Tucson thing for work because they have the Tucson Aerobatic Shootout. So it would be like this big RC airplane thing in the desert.
Okay.
But when I was racing bicycles and I wasn't the broken heap that I am now, I had friends that would have bikes out there. So we'd go bicycle, like we did road riding and also off-road or mountain biking.
Oh.
But they have a thing, and I'm sure he'll know what we're talking about. It's called the Thousand Year Trail. And it's like a cow path that's at the top of Mount Lemmon, and it comes down. So, like, you take this thing all the way up, and it's basically like a bobsledding track
okay.
for bicycles. So, like, thousands and thousands of years of cows walking down the hill has created this bobsledding track that comes down the whole mountain in the really? In the stone. So, shit. The dude that took me was like, stay behind me. Do not pass me. Do not go faster than me. There'll be times when we're going fast. Stay with me. But if I start slowing down, slow down. I was like, okay, you know.
Yeah.
So well, I'm behind him.
I can argue with that.
But like we're in this like, you know, bobsledding thing. And so you can't even see out of it. So we're just raging and going up on the sides. And we're doing like a pretty fast clip. And then he starts to slow down. I'm like, oh, got to slow down, right? So then we come around this turn where he's slowing down. And then there's no right side to the path anymore. Oh. Like the bobsledding thing is still going, but the whole right side now has broken out. And you have the trail under your feet and then like an 800-foot drop to your right.
Right. Shit.
And I was like, you could have led with that. Like, yeah. that just slow down and follow me. And then we went for a road ride out there, and they were like, okay, we'll meet here at 4 a.m. And I was like, 4 a.m.? And it's like, yeah, we want to get in the 100 miles, so we're going from 4, because you have to be done by 8:30 in the morning, because by 9, it's like 103 degrees.
Yep.
So, but it's beautiful, man. And that's where, when we're talking about sand outside,
right,
on the mountain bike, that's when I first learned about sand dips. Yep. As I launched over the handlebars into a fucking jumping cactus that stuck into my face. But anyways, yeah, I love that area. Great place.
There you go. There it is. Roadrunner Bicycles, 520-790-9394. 790-9394. Nice. And over 400 bikes in stock.
I actually, as a counter to this, before we get any further, because I know where Johnny's going to go with this, but before we go any further, I might need a bicycle recommendation, because I have threatened to buy a bicycle once the weather gets a little bit warmer to ride the 1 mile to work.
Yeah.
Now, I'm being serious. Like, I need the exercise, because I'm getting...
Yeah, well, I mean, that's a nice walk. I mean, I've walked that several times now. Yeah. Now that you're over here, it's actually good. They carry Giant, Live, Momentum, Birria, Aventon, and Big Sur. So they've got many bicycles.
Tom, you seem like a longboard kind of guy.
No, I don't think so. I've been thinking about a nice, inexpensive hybrid, but
let's go back to the motorcycle.
Let's circle back to Mr. Elliott's question.
Okay, number one, kudos to you for delivering bicycles on your Himalayan.
Absolutely. Yep.
We've seen, probably everybody's seen some sort of motorcycle. I'm wondering if he's just doing like a mount off the back. Or is he going, I'm hoping you're not doing a sidecar. Please don't do that.
Yeah.
But if you are, that's fine.
I've seen a couple of bicycle mounts on motorcycles before.
It's doable.
Yeah. I think we've got customers that come into our shop on Vespas that have they have kits for road bikes.
Yep.
You know, and they've got a setup so that they can fuck off, and then when they get out where they're going to be, they unload the road bike and go do the thing, and then they come back. And so if it works on a Vespa, it'll work on a Himalaya. But
I'm going to say, for the RPM question, a Royal Enfield is not a high-strung machine.
Nope.
I'm going to say keep it in the lower revs. Right. If that were my bike, that's how I'd ride it.
Phil and I are of the same mind on this, because we've both said that Stellas are a good example. Mm-hmm. Where Indians love low RPM, high MPG.
Yeah, absolutely.
And if you're talking about Royal Enfield, which has been the same thing for decades... Low RPM, high MPG.
Yeah. But there was a whole... So that Fort Nine dude, mm-hmm. Ryan from Fort Nine, did a whole video about RPMs and motorcycles. And he said that a lot of people do ride... They're lugging their bike actually too low. And sometimes that can cause more damage than revving it out.
Remember, though, he was riding a super small displacement two-stroke.
Yeah, right. But nobody talked about it. He talked about different kinds of bikes.
I get it. I absolutely get it.
I don't know. I mean... part of an engine running is running the oil pump. So if you're running it too low, you're pumping less oil. So I wouldn't say you want to run it too low or too high. You want to be in a comfortable thing. Like, keep it, you don't want to be blipping. I'm assuming a Himalayan has a rev limiter at some point.
Yeah.
It's going to sign off. So you shouldn't really be able to over rev it, but you don't really want to be at 100%.
Yeah.
You know, and it depends on what you're riding in too. You guys all talked about sand. Lugging it through the sand might not be as easy. You might have to keep some RPMs just so you're not stalling it or getting bogged down.
I was about to say, like, if you have a soft substrate underneath you, you're going to want better throttle. Like, if you're at 2,800 RPMs and lugging it, you're not going to get the throttle response to get your tire back up or out of a problem, you know?
I mean, going
there you go. That's what you need right there.
That's what I want.
There you go.
It's almost like I've been doing this for
Oh, God.
Years. Okay. So this is what we brought up for our folks at home, is we brought up the horsepower and torque chart from a Royal Enfield Himalayan, and it makes 21 horsepower at, no shit, 1,800 RPM. So it makes 21 horsepower at 1,800 RPM. It drops off 2,500 or so, and then all the way up till 6,000 RPM, the horsepower curve is just flat, okay?
Yeah.
It doesn't change. This motor has 7,500 RPM to give before the piston jumps out of it.
Yeah.
Okay? So this is not a high revving motor.
Yeah.
These are Vespa numbers.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay?
With 21, you're double a P200.
That's NC700 numbers right there.
Yeah.
So, but what I want to call attention is the maximum horsepower is all the way up there at 6,200 RPM. And that's 21.81. But even at its starting horsepower at 2,000 off idle, it's still 20 fucking horsepower.
Yeah.
So if you believe in the theory that horsepower is how fast you hit the wall. Torque is how far you move the wall, right? This bike's horsepower curve, it doesn't matter how many RPMs you're doing. It really doesn't. Look at that thing. It is literally a flat line.
Yeah, as soon as you turn the throttle, you got all of it.
Exactly. The second you come off idle, even at idle, it's 18 horsepower.
Yeah.
Okay? Now, it does the torque climb. There is no more torque to be had out of this motor than the magic number that everybody should have memorized, 5252. Because at 5252, the way dyno charts work and the way horsepower works, it's a mathematical formula, and at 5,252 RPMs, the numbers always touch. Now, I don't care whether you're riding a Harley-Davidson or you're riding a Ducati, at 5,252 numbers, at 5,552, the numbers always touch, because that's the mathematic formula that brings you to horsepower and torque. With torque, you can determine horsepower. With horsepower, you can determine torque. It's a mathematical formula. We don't use Newton meters in this country. We don't use kilowatts in this country. We probably should. It would make life a lot easier.
Yep.
But this motorcycle has absolutely nothing to give you after 5252.
So the harder you're revving it, the more heat you're making. So, so especially if you're in a hot...
Your torque drops off dramatically on this bike after 5252. Now, there are a hell of a lot of motorcycles where your torque continues to go up after 5252, any inline four Japanese sport bike in the world, but your horsepower will start dropping, right? But those numbers are going to cross. Okay, the numbers are going to touch each other at that because that's the mathematical formula to get horsepower. It's fun. If you do some research into that, you'd be like, oh, okay, well, great. Because if somebody ever tells you, at 5252, my horsepower was 78, but my torque was 48. I'm like, you're lying, because that's not how math works, right? Math has to math. So with this motorcycle, there's no reason for him to ever go over 5,200 RPM, because although he may be experiencing a less than one horsepower bump in horsepower, he's experiencing 2+ foot-pounds loss. So he's losing torque pretty dramatically. The torque is dropping off pretty quickly after 5,200 RPM on this.
Yeah, that's a pretty steep curve. Pretty steep curve, right? Yeah.
It goes down as fast as it came up.
Oh, yeah.
Right. So it goes down as fast as he came up. So this sheet tells me that the money shot on this bike is at 5,000 RPM.
Yeah, I was going to say, looking at that chart, if that was my bike, yep. I would ride it between idle and 5,000.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah,
no reason to ever rev it beyond 5,000.
And for cruising, look, you're like, I usually cruise honestly on most bikes between 38 and 45. That's like my cruising thing, right. Whatever. And if you look, even if he cracked the throttle all the way to the top at 43, you're where you would be at max. Yeah, you're done.
Exactly. Shift.
Shift. And that does, if you do buy into, I have no idea about what this particular motorcycle's gear ratios are. I don't know. I don't care. But I know that with most motorcycles, we can generally buy about a 1,000 RPM gap between gear to gear to gear to gear to gear. Different bikes are different, but we play along at home. If this guy shifts at 6 when he's in a hurry, if he's in a hurry and he shifts at 6 and he drops to 5, he's still right in the meat and potatoes. He's right where he needs to be.
Yeah.
So if he's in a hurry and he's boogieing along and he wants to make magic happen, I wouldn't shift ever above 6,000 RPM.
Yeah, doing that, yeah. I mean,
you're not getting anything.
You're not getting anything at it. Because if you shift at 7,000, I don't think this motor's going to let you shift at 7,500. I think it's pretty well spent at that point. Or it's got a rev limiter. But there's a reason the chart stops at 7,500, right? Yeah, because these charts can go as far as they need to go. But anyway, it is a very good question. And your particular motorcycle, it's probably, like Tom is saying, it is probably...
Shift early, shift often.
Dude, this motorcycle has a horsepower, strange starting horsepower at 2,000 RPM.
It's, well, okay, no, let's look at this.
That suggests a family of five.
Yeah. Because in
a maximum fuel saving situation.
Indian market stuff, and this is a Royal Enfield, they have adapted for American markets, is an entirely different beast.
Okay, so talking a little bit about fuel economy. So if you want really, really good fuel economy, what you want is a lot of torque and very little horsepower.
Yep.
So if you have a whole lot of torque and you have very little horsepower, you have a Honda Parallel Twin 700 motor, right? That's what they do. and you're going to get really good horsepower, or really good miles per gallon on it. And you can see that this motorcycle does, in fact, have a very offset ratio to give you great horsepower at super low RPMs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, look, and it's almost telling you to...
And there's no torque to come with it.
Yep. No, but it's almost telling you, like, if you're around the city, I would be at, like, 2,800.
Yeah.
See that peak, that mm-hmm. dropping little right. sucker right there?
Yep. So I thought that was an interesting chart to bring up for his case. I think it's a really good... I mean, that's a good practical use example for a guy who actually has that real motorcycle.
Somebody once told me, because this was in reference to the Bajaj four strokes.
Mm-hmm.
This is what the Indians will do in their home is they will start off in first, and as soon as the bike is rolling,
change gears.
You go to fourth.
Yep.
There is no second. There is no third gear. It is all first and then fourth gear, and you lug it up to speed.
Who's
and I have no idea who told me that, but it's been in the back of my head for ages.
So who here has ever ridden a motorcycle that had a rotary gear shifter? So when you got to the top gear, you clicked it again. It went right back to neutral. So neutral, one, two, three, four. Yeah, neutral,
My Fly Scout had that.
Okay.
A lot of other Honda clone motors have those.
Yeah, yeah. Bingo. Yes. That's exactly right. The Asian markets, your Fly Scout,
yep.
your Asian markets have that. And the reason they have that is because you're commuting. And you're ripping up through the gears, and then you got to stop. You're ripping up the gears, and you got to stop. You're ripping up the gears. So rather than going up three clicks and then going back down three clicks... You just go up three clicks and then go one more click, and that puts you right back in
the first.
Your shifter drum just keeps going around and around.
Yep, going around and around and around. And that's why in places that shift early, shift often, that pays. Because then you can go one, two, three, four real fast, and then instantly one more click be back to zero again. And that's the idea of stop and go, stop and go, stop and go, stop and go. And you're never kissing the gears down, shifting on the way down.
I'm sorry, I said Fly Scout. I should have said the dick.
Well, yeah. I thought it'd be fun just to pull up for the sake of shits and giggles. It'd be fun to pull up the Suzuki motorcycle dyno chart for Suzuki's comparable motorcycle, which would be the DRZ 400S, which is also a off-roady motorcycle, right? That has existed since Christ was a private. It's 400 cc's as well. So I thought it'd be really cool to bring up this chart to compare it to the...
probably very much the same.
It's probably very similar. It's probably almost identically the same chart. Whoa, wait a second. That is not the same chart at all. That chart couldn't be any more goddamn different than that Royal Enfield Himalayan chart.
It's got about 15 more slappers on
it. It's got a lot more Hirschbergs, as they say, right? There's a whole lot more Hirschbergs. But more importantly, notice that at the low RPMs, there's not that they're not that, that not gap. That gap. So at low RPM, right, this low speed, that motorcycle is got no horsepower or torque.
But look, I don't think the lines touch it, the 5252
this
thing.
When you look at this, it's not RPM, it's speed. This is an old style chart that does speed, not RPM.
Yeah.
So we're not looking at RPMs on this one. We're looking at speed. This is a rolling road dyno style.
Nice.
But the point being just the same, though, that if we look at it at low speeds, our torque and our horsepower are also very low. And then they go up progressively. And what do? They have a perfect, they're basically synchronous. They're basically in line with each other the whole way up. That is the opposite of what the Enfield is doing. The Enfield is going no power. No horsepower, shit tons of torque, or horsepower, no torque whatsoever.
I just like the pretty fact that you turn the key and you got 20 horsepower.
Yeah, yeah. Right?
Like, it's just there.
Well, it's because it's like a generator motor.
Yeah.
Yeah, just like that. Giant flywheel.
I was going to say, what size is the flywheel on that thing? Yeah.
If it's anything like the 500, it's huge. It's
John,
it's a 25-pound metal plate.
Dumbbell. It is the most ridiculous thing. Hand of God, I looked at that flywheel and I was like, why? Why the fuck did they do that?
This goes back to the Indian market, though, where they're looking for a half mile an hour. Exactly. They're looking for that lugging.
The crank was supported
high MPG.
It had two different bearings. It was like a ball bearing on one side and then a roller bearing on the other. It was funky.
Yeah, I will pull up just because we have it accessible to us very quickly. I'm going to bring up a traditional... a dyno chart, so you guys can see it, what it looks like in its natural format, the way it should be. for that DRZ. Because the DRZ, you're going to see, there you go, there's the chart.
There's your 52.
So your 52 is there, just like it says, math always maths, math always wins. And when you look at this bike, yeah, it doesn't build anything resembling, you know, really cool torque, right? Really, really cool torque. Until you're in that, there's this really sweet spot at 6,000 RPM, and then the torque just starts falling off. I mean, falling the fuck off as the horsepower continues to climb. And that's fun. I mean, that's going to be a neat thing because you're not digging anymore.
And if you look at that, that's over too, rev. You got your horsepower between, say, 6,500
mm-hmm.
and 9 grand. So you operate that one at relatively high revs compared right. to the Himalayan we just saw.
Exactly.
Which doesn't pay you a nickel to go over 5.
And that's yep. the difference in the charts.
Yep.
When he says, should I be running at low RPMs or should be running at high RPMs? If he was riding a if he's riding a DRZ 400S, right, then he's got a whole fun zone that exists over 6,000.
Plus, I mean, like when you're on a bike.
But his bike won't go over 7,000 RPMs.
No, but when you're on a bike, it kind of tells you where it wants to be too. Yeah. Like when you're on the highway, like you'll know if like, if you're trying to go, if you want a nice smooth ride, you'll find what speed is for that bike. These are
both 4-stroke singles.
Yes.
Yeah,
like, right? You will find like what where it wants to be a lot of times.
Great example though, comparing a Himalaya to any other 4-stroke single.
Yeah.
Any other 4-stroke 400cc single, because his bike does have a unique personality.
Yeah.
That you're not going to find in an XR. You're not going to find that in a DR. You're not going to find that in bikes that are meant to be out in the out.
No, this
spraying gravel around
the Suzuki.
I can always say one of the things I always wanted to do was like I wish that like when we had the 500s, mm-hmm. I'm like this would be a fun bike to off road if you lightened it up and put some knobbies on it because it's a fucking tractor.
It is a tractor.
You could definitely have some fun with it.
Yeah. That's what I was going to say. Like the DR. You're not letting the clutch out at zero and then just going at one RPM in the parking lot.
Yeah,
it's gonna stall.
No, I will say, at less than 3,000 RPM, you already have 15 foot-pounds of torque.
Yeah,
which that Royal Enfield didn't get to 15 foot-pounds of torque until it was over 5,000 RPM. Right. So when we think about like how quickly the DRZ goes from 5 torques to 15 torques. That is a rocket ship ride.
Well, but
look at the first 1,000 RPM.
This glass weighs more than the flywheel. Exactly. Deer's
it does. It's a light switch. It's an absolute fucking light switch. So that the weight of the flywheel probably has the most bearing on that.
Yeah.
It probably does. And again, it's what's the bike built to do? So if the bike is built to climb the Himalayas in first gear with the clutch out, right? And to be slow enough that you could get off the bike, go get a loaf of bread and get back on the bike while it's in first gear with the clutch out.
Right.
You're good.
Yeah.
Right, you're fine. Yep. Never shift. You save gas that way. It's a pretty interesting thing. Pretty interesting when you look at it. So yeah, that was our mail. Yeah, we do get mail. So
and not all of it's hate mail, which is nice.
It's pretty fun. It was nice. John, it was refreshing to get.
John's going
to
be depressed.
It's not a big surprise that you're not going to want to wring the tits off of a Himalaya.
Right.
No. But you're going to be sad that
we can tell you the head gasket, it failed on every single Royal Enfield 500 that somebody tried to wring their tits off of.
Mm.
Yeah. Those things didn't need to have a seal on there. Like, they didn't need to have a tattletale that told us if you were abusing your bike. We knew. The oil came out.
But we had your favorite guy. We talked about him last week.
Oh, yeah.
He here. It was sad.
Yeah, I got to answer his tech question.
Dude,
he was looking for you, though.
Yeah. He was asking for you, but you abandoned us for Jesus.
Yeah.
Yeah, Matt Davidson had some concerns, but
Dave Matheson.
Dave Matheson. Yeah, he's clued in on that.
We had
a little bit of fun at his expense.
Yeah.
We sent him a Tanuki. But he was saying that on his particular Honda Dream, we talked about it, but I want to just mention it again. Dream 250.
Mm-hmm.
Gets it up to the top of the like pulling first gear, right? Pulling first gear, pulls the clutch in, right? To go for second.
Mm-hmm.
But instead of the RPMs coming down between 1 and 2, they still keep going up.
Wow.
Yeah.
I know exactly what that problem
go
is.
Ahead.
But let's wait till next week to talk about it.
And on that note,
hey everybody, remember to ride fast and take chances. Play us out of here, John.
Take chances. 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 Take ch